speak.
The Joint Interim Task Force on Campaign Finance Reform will come to order. I don't know how orderly you are out there.
You may need to refresh the video screen now that we are live, and you should be able to, what should have been a black screen should now have the hearing room on it. I hear you.
No, I don't have.
Try to refresh.
When you think we have everybody, could we just say who's here so
yes,
we know?
Yes.
A packed house.
I take it that's a good sign you can see us.
Does anybody still have problems seeing it?
There's a smiling face with volume.
Excellent.
All right. Okay. Well, welcome, everybody. Senator Rosenbaum wasn't here when we were naming off who's all on the phone. So maybe, Aaron, you go through and do a little roll call and see if we're right, still correct.
So this is who I have on the phone. Representative Kennemer?
Yes.
Representative Rayfield?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Dave?
Yes.
Nikki?
Sorry, Aaron, there's this lag between the phone and the video.
Absolutely. Yes. No, they're absolutely. Margie?
Yes.
And Kyle?
Yes, hello.
Yes.
And Brad?
Yes.
And Norman?
Here.
And Seth?
Present.
And Senator Boquist, I don't believe, is on the phone. So, and then Senator Rosenbaum is here, and the chair is here, and so we will be coming back to order in just 1 second. The chair just stepped out for a second.
Well, I mean, I was just at the Grand Hotel, and I had to spend the entire circuit once for
good morning. That must be Jean's.
Do you want one? All right.
That would be great. Oh, that's nice of you.
Okay. Well, what do you want
today? Just cream. My apologies.
No. All right.
Trying to decide whether to keep the Secretary of State's office open today or not.
I thought I heard state offices weren't opening until noon.
They aren't, but we have to make an independent decision.
Right.
It's a thing.
Yep.
It is.
All right.
Well, thank you, everybody, for being here, so attentive to this.
Can we get rid of that? Somebody has their computer on and just needs to turn down the volume.
So we're getting an echo and thinking that if people either mute or turn down the volume on your computer.
Mute your phone.
Mute your phone.
Isn't going to work.
Okay, I'm going to try again now.
Yeah,
there we go. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. And we promise that we'll be patient for you to come on and off mute as you join the discussion. So today we're going to try to arrive at some votes so that we can talk about what proportion of the task force is in support of which possible items. I hope that we can work through these diligently and appreciate the extra information that came both from Representative Rayfield, from Norm, and Seth this morning. You know, turned in some analysis on the two bill drafts of Representative Rayfield. I want to start with what might be the easiest pieces, or not, depending on how things go. I'm hoping that the little chart that was sent out made some sense to you all. The effort was to arrive at some findings type language for the report that were not, you know, that were somewhat general but reflected the our understanding of our own discussion in each of these areas, and then to go through some of the very specific proposals that were put on the table. So if there are questions about that, let's start there.
Open for work session.
I'm sorry. Open the work session. Identifying task force members' positions on recommendations for campaign finance related to these four areas listed on the agenda.
Do I have to do this again? I have to do that again.
Okay. So again, questions about the process that we're going to try to work through.
This is Dave Ellis. I just have a question on the first item where it says allow for credit to be carried over. Could there be some clarification on what is meant by carried over?
Yes, we will do that. As we come to each item, we'll have some discussion and provide additional information about each thing. So thank you. That helps us be clear.
And Madam Chair, it seems like one option that's not on here is just leaving the tax credit as it is. I don't know that people want to do that, but.
Well, my assumption is if we don't do any of those, then we keep it as it is.
That makes sense.
So who just joined us or hung up?
Andrew Cousin.
Andrew, hi. Wonderful. So we have quite a crowd on the phone. We're going to ask you to mute your phone if you can, so we don't get the feedback. Senator Rosenbaum and Aaron and I are here in hearing room B. And if you had come, you could have cookies, but you can't because you didn't come. So we were just...
Gene?
Yes.
Gene, it's Fred Lynn. I think that probably the only thing, and I think this has been a really helpful way to organize the information, is that if we're going to move something out of the committee, it needs not a majority, but it needs a strong majority. If not consensus, and I understand that would probably be nearly impossible to reach. There's a lot of stakeholders in this who come with different constituencies and different considerations. And again, I don't think this is a plus one type of set of proposals. These are things that we ought to, if not unanimous, at least have a really strong committee view on if we're going to actually represent them as the work product of the group.
I appreciate that comment. I think that is a difficult standard to actually implement, because ideally, obviously, everybody would agree on everything, but realistically, that is not going to happen, I'm sure, today. And we don't have everybody here participating. Maybe we will eventually. But so even getting to a majority threshold with some absent members could be challenging due to the weather, et cetera. So I get what you're saying, but I think, you know, that could be a goal, but I don't really think that can be a requirement.
So this is Jean. Let me tell you how I envision this and see whether it sits well with the group. I think we take votes and we identify where we have people are willing to sign on to a recommendation or not, and we report that as it happens. And we don't make an effort to decide this is going to speak completely for the task force. What we make an effort to do is to report that out of the task force group, you know, this many people felt, you know, felt that this was an appropriate step to take, and this many did not. Legislative leadership, as we go forward, and there are going to be bills, and they're going to reflect a number of these issues, probably all of them at some point will be available to the legislature to work with. We'll kind of make decisions, I'm quite sure, based on the strength of the recommendation. That is, you know, was it a, you know, a very divided task force, or was it something that was worth worth more attention because it had a greater sense of by, either bipartisan or by, you know, across our the various elements of our task force had that, and we will write our report very carefully to reflect that, let you all look at it to make sure that you feel comfortable that we've reflected what the opposition was to things. We're in an education process here with the rest of the legislature is the way I look at it, and I think it'll be very helpful to them, and there will be vehicles, but I'm not going to try to unilaterally decide. Oh, gosh, here's another task force member arrived on the spot. Daniel is now here. I'm not going to try to unilaterally set the bar of exactly where it goes or where it doesn't. We'll report what the votes were, and that will speak for us. Is that a comfortable arrangement for folks, given the diverse opinions we have on our group? You'll make that judgment maybe when you see the draft and see whether you need to either object that it's there or not. So I want to take these one at a time, and of course they're not in the chart. They're not quite in the same order that they are on the agenda. So since those weren't numbered, I'm feeling like I'm free to, you know, move the issues around with that. The first thing I'm going to ask you is to look at that statement in bold, which was an effort to reflect kind of the sense of the discussion, and be sort of a factual statement, if you will, and see whether or not there are what folks' position would be on including this as a reflection of the task force. It doesn't conclude to do anything. It only concludes that this is a short summary of the issue, and maybe I should start by asking whether there are any edits that folks think would make it more appropriate or positive for them to support.
This is Bill Kennemer. I guess I don't quite understand, and maybe you're going to answer questions later, but make tax refundable. I'm not sure what that means.
I understand, and I as we go through this, we will get down into the list of possible options. What I'm asking at this moment is simply whether that statement in bold at the top, Erin is highlighting here, feels like a good reflection of the discussion of the task force about the tax credit. We're not getting into the options yet. We're just talking about making this statement. That Oregon campaign contribution tax credit has been useful in encouraging small contributions by individuals and gives candidates the opportunity to do positive outreach to constituents. The program has had bipartisan support over the years. That's my reading of kind of the consensus of our discussion, just on, you know, a description of how the political tax credit would work.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Norman.
Mm-hmm.
I might add after the word candidates and political committees, because this tax credit also can go to political committees.
Yes, it can.
Brad agreed.
Yep.
you know, it seems to me that was part of our discussion as well, that it had a reverse impact, that still the individual could make the choice what was the best way that they wanted to get involved.
That's right. We did, you're right, we did talk about that. Is that objectionable to anybody? Okay. So what I, just to remind, so as we develop a final report for the end of this year, we would have this statement in the report, and then we might make some recommendations around it. You know, who else was in here? Senator Brookquist.
No, yeah.
Okay. Let's go through each of the options. I will remind you that one of the pieces of advice, which was what made me think that Senator Brookquist, to remind me that he's not here, so we should note that, was that we were also recommended that if we had recommendations around this, that we might prioritize them. And that might be a little more difficult discussion, but let's go through each of them just to, again, so people understand them.
And
Senator?
Could I just...
Hang on a second, Senator.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, just a moment.
So this is Diane Rosenbaum. I just wanted to make a general comment that I think was said quite a bit at our last meeting on November 17th, which is that there was a thorough review of the political tax credit during the 2013 session. That took place because of the legislature having put sunsets on all tax credits so that they come up for periodic review. And so just to remind folks that in that 2013 session, there was a thorough discussion of everything from eliminating this tax credit to repurposing it to a lot of other things. And the result of that was legislation which added the means testing. So that I just want to refresh people's memory, was one of the significant points about reversing the means testing, for instance. And I just ask, do we know when this comes up for its automatic sunset review again?
In 2019. But if the legislature were to take action
for
now.
For sure.
Right. So somebody else had a question?
Yes, this is Kyle.
Kyle.
At the current, are we just looking at amending the text, or is this the time to say whether we agree with it or not?
Well, I'd like to get people's questions. We had a couple of questions about what some of these, the options, explaining the options a little more. Let's get questions about that out of the way before we start arguing for or against one or the other.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Well, but I wasn't asking about arguing about the options. I wanted to express a disagreement with the statement itself.
Oh, okay. All right. We're back to that. Okay.
Well, I actually disagree with the statement. I think the data from the Legislative Revenue Office shows that only 5 to 7% of filers were claiming this credit, and the majority of those were the same filers from year to year. So it does not appear to me that it actually succeeds in encouraging contributions.
It's fine to have that position, and we can note that. But let me clarify. I don't think they told us it was the same filers every year, because they don't really, they aren't able to tag it to match it with revenue, specific revenue data. It's been at the same level, I would agree, for it goes up and down. But
there was a slide that indicated the number of years a particular filer claimed the credit.
No, I think there were the number of there were percentages of the income level, and the type of filer. But one of the challenges is that we really can't know how often one person versus another uses it, because they can't attach it individually to donors. I think your greater point being it is a small percentage of filers in any given year. It's not an expanded group. It's maybe a clearer point.
Slide 14.
Okay, I've got those here.
I wanted to just kind of
this
add.
This is Daniel speaking.
Yeah, sorry, Daniel at Common Cause. I kind of hear what you're saying, Kyle, in a lot of ways, too. But I think I was looking at this statement, too. I mean, it does encourage small contributions by individuals. Like, it actually, I think it's indisputable that it does encourage people to be involved. We would also add it probably doesn't encourage enough people to be involved, and there's other ways that we could encourage a greater participation beyond the small margin of folks who participate in the tax credit process, but it doesn't discourage people, and it doesn't have no effect. I think it does encourage, but we do feel like there are other policy options that would encourage way more than a tax credit does. So that's kind of the way that we're falling on it, too, which I think, Kyle, kind of like addresses your point that, you know, we don't want to misrepresent that it's, you know, bringing thousands and thousands of people into the process. It probably isn't, but it definitely isn't discouraging people, and it's definitely it does have a positive effect, though that positive effect is very small.
So I want to concur that this is Norman with the League of Women Voters. My point would be almost the same, that this is a useful tax credit, but not as useful as it could be. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we might want to consider it a future point to trade this tax credit and the money that it represents for some sort of public financing. This tax credit is useful, but not enough people are actually taking advantage of it, and there's probably ways to make the reward for making a contribution to a candidate or political committee more rewarding by doing it more immediately rather than a tax credit that comes up to a year later. So I think that's the flaw in this tax credit, is that the reward for the actually doing something good is delayed for such a long time.
I did have two questions about the policies, because I know we were engaging.
Can we? I want to swing back to Kyle for just a second, so he doesn't feel that we've blown by his by his point. Looking at, I'm confused with the slide on page 14 personally, just because every time we asked a more detailed question about who is using it, we got the answer that we couldn't know. But I agree with you that it reads in a way that indicates that the same, you know, a high percentage of people use it a small number of times, and a lower percentage of people use it more often. I would be willing to seek some clarification from legislative revenue about that, but I think it's also appropriate to you know, amend the statement to you know, say something about, you know, and again we can acknowledge that a minority view of the committee is that it's insufficiently you know, that it does not have a positive effect because of the limited number of individuals who actually use that. Is that a statement that you feel should be included, Kyle?
Yes, that would make me happy. Yep.
Jean, this is
go ahead.
I'm sorry, my phone call. Gene, I would strongly disagree with that. I honestly think what we're doing is we're trying to approach this as an administrator as opposed to a first-time candidate. Increasing and encouraging participation is not just a function of a person who uses this as a way to be involved either for the first time or on repeating occasions. This is used by a vast, wide variety of people in a wide variety of ways. Is a positive asset. I absolutely would love to see it expanded. I absolutely would like to see more opportunities in it, but I'm also a realist, particularly given Diane's extremely important point about its last consideration in our current budget situation. I would be fine if this just literally ended, that we strongly support its continuation and ways to explore means of increasing and expanding this program. You know, for a variety of reasons, this is useful to a variety of groups, a variety of candidates, and a variety of contributors. And, you know, I think first off, our task force should do no harm. And we've learned some useful things about this particular tax credit. But I think given the current fiscal considerations that we might be making progress just by saying this should not be in the mix when we're trying to solve budget problems in the upcoming session.
So do we...
Just talking, please.
Sorry, that was Brad. I apologize.
Are there others besides Kyle for whom it's a problem to express this in positive terms about its utility? We don't have to be specific about exactly how, and again, not taking a position on whether it should be expanded. But are there other? Would there be other votes in favor of? Not having the tax credit, not regarding it as a positive contributor to the overall system.
Secretary, this is Justin Delaney. Mm-hmm. I have a little bit more nuanced position. I don't disagree with the bold statement, but I feel very strongly that with the current means testing, it's doing harm at best and unconstitutional at worst. So I'll nuance that when we get down to the options, but just wanted to express that I'm not wholeheartedly in support of the tax credit language as it currently exists.
Okay.
This is Dave Ellis, Madam Chair, and I would just say all we're saying, it's a useful tool. And I think that's the limit of this statement, and I don't see any real issue with that.
Okay. We'll try to make sure that the report and the record reflects a little bit of this discussion. So the list of items that we had talked about or that had been potentially raised by our discussion were enthusiastically raising the current amount of the credit to 75 and 150, removing that recently adopted means testing. And I had written it this way after I looked at Minnesota's. There had been mention that Minnesota had a way to more instantly get a return on this. What they have is actually a separate form that you file separately from your tax return. You still have to apply, and they still have to mail it to you, and you have to wait until the end of the year that you're applying for. I think it may speed it up a little bit. I don't know that it speeds it up a lot, and it's all in suspension at the moment. Anyway, so it was kind of hard to do. But I put it, allow for application to receive a cash credit rather than incorporating into the calculation of the tax, which is the way that we do it now. Might make it a little easier and more exciting because a check would come in the mail. Refundable, there was a question, questions about that. That is the question of somebody else go with refundability.
To answer it or?
Yeah.
Yeah, so to make a credit refundable just means that if you don't earn enough money to owe any taxes, then you still can apply for an amount to be refunded to you. So the biggest example most people know about is the earned income tax credit, which is for low-income people, and Oregon does have it, and the federal tax code does as well. So if you're a low-income person, you earned wages, you paid taxes, and you don't owe anything at the end of the year, a refundable credit means you can still get the benefit of that credit.
Yes. So it would be a benefit to the lowest income folks or those who are filing on a low income scale for their income tax. Allowing for the credit to be carried over, that was also one of the states had an element of that, and that it's kind of like refundability, and that that you could just apply it to your next year's potential taxes. It's, you know, like any other kind of deduction. Some deductions and credits are you are able to move them over to the next tax year if it's not as beneficial for you to use it now. It's pretty sophisticated tax thing for a very simple item. That may not be one, but I'd be, because it was on the list of things that other states had looked at, I wanted to make sure you had it. I've added to the bottom of the list, should be traded for public financing. That may be something on which we want to see where people are. We might wait till we do our public financing thing and come back to that question. If you can, if I don't get confused and lose track of it, which you'll get me straight.
I want to just ask one quick question, if that's okay.
Identify yourself.
Daniel at Common Cause. I saw here for the first time LC2464. Which is an interesting idea, and I was wondering, I don't know if you want to talk about this now, or you want to talk about it in the public financing section, or later in this section, but I just wanted to raise up that question because I didn't want to miss the opportunity. And this directs the Department of Revenue to deliver vouchers to certain personal income taxpayers who fail to use income tax credit for political contribution in the last tax year. So it kind of provides a voucher for folks who don't use the credit, which is a really interesting solution. I want to know what was kind of the thought process behind that and whether other states do that at all, and where the idea came from.
Erin is going to speak to that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I discovered this LC last night. It was introduced by House Revenue this week. It's a committee measure. I'm not sure. It was just, I will say, to some extent, a little bit of dumb luck that I came upon it. Mm-hmm. So I don't and have not had the opportunity to ask any of the questions about where this idea originated from, who in that committee brought that to revenue. I just thought I found it, and it would be an interesting kind of twist on both the political tax credit and public funding that, just so everybody knows, will be in the ether this session, will be a bill this session, what traction it has, kind of the history behind it, you know, who is would like to see this is still yet to be discovered, but this was something that was introduced earlier this week during legislative days, and it is something that I will have on OLIS for it. I just wasn't able to do it last night. But that's all we know about it, but I just thought it's an interesting idea that should be certainly something this task force should have an opportunity to think about and or react to for this upcoming session, because it will be a bill in some form.
Does any of our legislators have a source to tell us whose bill this was or how it came to House Revenue's attention?
This is Diane, and I certainly don't know who put it in, but I will tell you that having served on the Revenue Committee for many years, many, many, many bills get introduced as committee bills that never get hearings.
Yeah, right, so. Yep. Oh, yes. I don't think we're not going to go down the road of how likely an opportunity it is, but we can certainly follow up with House Revenue and see what member or the chair, how
certainly
that came about.
It's certainly an interesting twist on the voucher system, similar to Seattle, and then kind of in combination with our own existing structure for the political tax credit.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Hadn't thought of that one.
If we could delay more discussion about that, perhaps until we finish the discussion on public financing, we might come back to it. I don't know which category to consider it in, I'd like to get a sense of the group around each of the modifications of the tax credit that people either would strongly oppose or would support, in the understanding that what the political likelihood is a whole other question, and if we have a sufficient number of votes to justify trying to order them, we can get to that process. So I'd like to ask folks, just generally sense of the group, their opinion on the notion of raising the amount of tax credit to 75 and 150. again, this isn't necessarily the only thing, but just to see whether it's worth keeping in our stable of possibilities. So
Dan Refield. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay. Let's do a roll call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to the position on raising the amount of the credit to 75 for individual and 150 for joint filers, I'm just going to do an alphabetical roll call.
Daniel Comcast. I'd actually kind of be curious to hear what Representative Rayfield's thinking is behind that.
Shall we have additional discussion about it? Go ahead. Yeah.
More than happy to just chime in. This is Dan. It's just a financial thing. If we're weighing where our efforts should be, number one, in terms of what we want to emphasize, I think there are more effective things we could do. And then number two, increasing the amounts budget-wise, I just think is effort-wise for us to support something is a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. Absent those political considerations, it is something that you could support. I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm just trying to decide what's the best way to get a sense of the group.
In a perfect world where, money grows on trees, I suppose I'm not necessarily opposed to the idea, but I always think that money could be better spent elsewhere in our budget.
Okay.
At all times, probably.
Okay. Okay. Well, is there other discussion before we get a sense of the group? Sorry?
Rep. Kennemer.
Representative Kennemer?
Yes, thank you. I've found over the years as a candidate that this is often a way to get people politically involved. And frankly, where your money goes also goes a lot of your thought. And I think this is a great way to get people more active in campaigns and more active in the selection of people and not let the big money run the campaign.
Thank you. Additional discussion before we take some yays and nays?
Yeah, this is Kyle. My position is government should not subsidize political speech. I think we should scrap the tax credit.
Yes. Okay, so let's get the yeas and nays here.
And again, just a reminder, we're voting on whether to support the raising the amount of the tax credit. And so I'm going to omit people who are not here. So, Senator Rosenbaum.
No.
Representative Kennemer.
Yes.
Representative Rayfield.
No.
Justin Delaney.
Yes.
Dave Ellis.
Yes.
Nikki Fisher.
No.
Margie Hughes. Margie?
No.
Thank you.
This is a hard one.
Daniel.
No.
Thank you, Margie.
I think I'm a no on this one.
Kyle?
No.
Brad?
Well, I'd like to vote yes to give the current budget. It's a no.
Norman?
I think I'd be a yes if we had the money, but I'm a no in other considerations. It's not my first choice, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. And Seth?
No.
You passed me up, Madam Chair. Andrew Cover.
I'm sorry. That's my fault. And Andrew?
Yeah, I'm going to say yes, although with similar reservations to Norman, but I think there's better places to look for. But if this one, to me, this is fairly politically expedient to do, even though it's a budgetary concern. It's a drop in the bucket of the budget. So I would say yes.
So based on the votes, we have got 4 yays and 11. 1, 2, 3,
Nine.
I'm sorry. Nine.
Right.
Nine no's.
But the chair is a yes. So and the chair. Five on the yes.
Yes.
So I think that that's a very good discussion and very, very, very helpful. You know, that there may have been slightly more impulse that it would be a good idea to continue to consider, but this is not the year, this is not the time, and we have some strong opposition. So thank you. That's very helpful. So let's talk about removing the recently adopted means testing. Again, appreciate that folks will have a context argument around that, and Justin has made the argument that he feels it's potentially unconstitutional. We have not had that reading from Ledge Council or the revenue experts, but even if not unconstitutional, I think Justin will tell me if I'm saying this wrong. He feels like that the discriminatory impact of that ends up being a negative in the political world. So let's run through. Is there more discussion of the removing of the means testing?
Just briefly, Madam Chair, Diane again. I just want to, in the strongest terms, express my opposition to removing the means testing on the basis that it was just a policy adopted by the legislature so recently that took effect. I think it would risk tainting some of our other recommendations to basically fly in the face of something that was well and thoroughly debated in 2013. I think reversing that policy now wouldn't be very productive, and I think it is a good idea to means test it because of the very arguments that have been made earlier that this credit was not designed for high-income people who really may take advantage of it, but there's no indication it changes their giving behavior.
Okay, let's run through quickly.
So this is a vote on removing recently adopted means testing. Senator Rosenbaum?
No.
Representative Kenemer?
Yes.
Representative Rayfield?
No.
Justin?
Yes, and with the added statement that I think, this tax credit was not designed with means testing in mind originally, and that we're talking about using tax dollars here for political speech, and discrimination in that application is absolutely toxic.
Dave Ellis?
Yes.
Nikki?
No.
Margie?
Yes.
Andrew?
Yes.
Daniel?
No.
Kyle?
Yes.
Brad?
No.
Norman?
No.
Seth?
I'm sorry. Say again.
No.
Okay.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
I don't think I don't care. Will do me. How about I vote yes and it's an absolute tie? And I think I think we can express our thoughts around this pretty clearly. For some people, the imposition of the means testing, has a toxic effect one way. For others, the fact that it was something the legislature just did makes it toxic a little bit the other direction. And there's quite a divided feeling about whether it would help in terms of overall increasing participation. Very divided feeling, and that's fine. It's okay for us to have that. Okay, this is the my maybe inept description of something that would allow it to happen more quickly and be returned in the form of a check, as opposed to having to have it, you know, taking it as a credit off of your taxes. And so I think that yes is if you think that would improve the situation, and no is if you think it would not, or you think it would have a negative effect of some kind. So the discussion? Yeah.
And just to clarify, so what we're looking at doing is instead of having a tax credit system, we're going to send people, or what we're thinking about the recommendation would be to send people the cash equivalent of that. Is that my understanding?
I'm not sure what cash equivalent means, but I think so.
Yeah. Check.
Right.
You get a check, and you can use that check for anything, or just for the tax for political contributions.
Well, the money that you would have to prove that you have made a political contribution, okay. In which case you would get $50 of that contribution back.
I see. Okay.
So it would have the same economic effect, but it would the reason for it being on the list is that it was seen as a way of kind of speeding up the reward or making it a little bit more visible. So was that Nikki?
Yes. Was this to address the folks that are low income who don't participate in the program? Is that what this was to address?
Well, I'll let folks who might have put it on the table speak to it, but that's my understanding that people felt like that might make it a little bit more of an immediate reward system. If they're not, again, if it was, not refundable, this is a way that it kind of becomes refundable. Someone who loves it might want to speak to it.
And this is Diane. I just am questioning how this would be administered by the Department of Revenue, because we don't do this even with the earned income credit, which is of much bigger value to low-income people. So we would have to set up some sort of administrative mechanism to do this. And I just would question whether that would even work. I mean, if we were going to do that, we ought to do it for the earned income tax credit too, but we don't. I mean, it's a big problem for low-income people to have to wait till the end of the year to get money back that they really need, but I just think this one is so small that it's probably not worth prioritizing.
Bill Kenmer.
Yes, Representative Kenmer.
I agree. I think this is an expensive procedure to send an individual check out to people. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This is Dan Rayfield. I quite frankly like the idea. I think there are a lot of people who don't file taxes, but at the same time, I would agree the administration of it would be, I would want to look at the idea a little bit more and understand the consequences of implementing something like this.
So this is Norman.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Norman.
I like the concept of speeding up the reward, as I indicated before, but there's probably administratively better ways of going about it than cutting a check and sending it in the mail. One scheme that was suggested was maybe having a website that people could connect their voter registration to the credit system and have a $50 or something from the state coffers directed to a particular candidate or committee. And that way it could be bundled and administered a lot more easily. I like the concept of, if we can sort of generalize this point, of being more rapidly rewarding voters for supporting candidates or political committees, but the mechanism, I think, is problematic, certainly.
Madam Chair, I'm wondering, and I don't want to, probably the worst thing of a study committee is to recommend more study, but this sounds like a very good idea, but it sounds like it might fail just because of concerns about what it would cost to administer, how it would be administered, or maybe there's a better variation that gets to the same point. Is it within the bounds of what we're doing to
instead of recommend this, recommend it highly for additional study. It seems to increase the options by which we address a lot of the issues we've been talking about as ways to enhance, but we're probably lacking the information right now to wholeheartedly endorse this one version of getting that done.
Well, I was just about to inquire whether there was anybody who was an unmitigated yes that is what would like to have this on our list in the absence of that, because it sounds like all of the discussion has been about problems and questions about it. I think it's absolutely appropriate for us to list this as something that's worthy of continued investigation as it moves forward.
And this is Daniel. I kind of want to second that point, because I think for me the struggles, I think the value of the idea is really interesting and really compelling for our task force. And, you know, obviously I think providing a cash credit for folks does encourage more people to participate, does encourage more low-income people to engage in their democracy too. And, you know, I think a cash credit could work. I think Norm's idea could work. I think a voucher system, you know, turning into a voucher system could work too. I think it seems like we need to figure out some of the questions around administration and cost and see if there's a better way to do it. But I think the value really does speak to one of the core reasons why the task force has come together in the first place. So I like the idea of studying it a little further.
Okay, Gene, this is Brad again. I'm always worried when I read these kind of reports that, you know, somewhere in the second to last paragraph, here's things we think we should study further, doesn't carry a lot of weight. I'm just wondering if, you know, we want to put the committee's mission or it's the power of its view behind this in a stronger way, as in have a vote on this deserving serious investigation, you know, with a committee vote on it. You know, we can't put every single thing up we can't resolve for a vote, but in this case, it sounds like a very interesting idea to explore and come up with a more perfected version, but maybe more than just it being listed as things we didn't resolve on and actually say, no, this is something we think we ought to lean into. We just don't have enough information right now.
So why don't we have a vote on that? Does anybody object to at least voting on the question of recommending a continued investigation on and I guess one of the things I might suggest, and let's see if it's objectionable to anybody, we might put this together with refundability. I'm having a sense we might have some of the same conversation around making it refundable or even carryover, which is probably less of interest because it's not doesn't really apply to low-income people so much as those who might have income going up and down. I don't know. I'm happy to record the votes of people that you know, rather than just state there is a consensus that we think we need to look further at these. Always with the outlier here, sorry to describe it that way, Kyle, that there is at least one member of the task force who thinks the political tax credit is a supporting of speech in a way that it shouldn't.
And Madam Chair, it's Diane again. I really don't want to belabor this because I think we really have a lot more stuff to get to, but I do think that setting up an entire administrative program to mail checks to everybody that applies for the political tax credit in against a backdrop of we don't do that for the kicker, we reversed that on the kicker years ago to save money because it costs a lot of money to mail those checks. We don't do that for low-income people on the earned income credit. I think it goes down a path that would just not be productive. So that's just my thoughts, but I'm not going to die on my sword over it.
Right, right. I think part of what's being considered is whether or not there's a way, short of mailing checks to everybody, that there could be a means of giving people the benefit of something, you know, financial
up front,
and that either through and or we, as I say, we might want to include refundability in this. That we think it more time to think of options that would not be as administrative burdensome, as administratively burdensome, is worth doing. can we combine the credit and refundability and vote on a statement as to whether we encourage that to be looked into in order to find, you know, something that would be administratively feasible. But serve the purpose of making it easier.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. This is Dan Rayfield. Maybe we change the question to we support the concept of returning the money faster to people that use it if it can be done in an efficient and cost-effective manner.
How does that strike people?
I like that.
I like that, although I don't think it should be combined with tax refundability.
Okay. Well, we'll discuss refundability separately. Okay. Shall we just see if how many no votes we have? Would that be helpful, or do you want to?
There is any no votes on that.
Are there any no votes on that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And Justin as well.
Okay. Okay. Any further discussion around refundability? I think some of the same things I'm sure apply in people's minds, concerned about cost, concern about equivalency with some of the other more impactful tax credits and so forth. At the same time, there may be those who would like to take a vote specifically that refundability is something that should be added into the system. I'm just sort of asking if people are ready to vote.
Yeah, I mean, it's Diane. I would support voting on this. I do think refundability is a good concept. I think it's a relatively small cost of $1.4 million per year, or $0.8 million a biennium, but even that small amount of money is going to be hard to come by in a session where we're cutting so many vital services, but I do support it.
Coming a record for a future session when things are better, maybe. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, let's take the yeas and nays. Thank you.
Jane, yes? Can someone very briefly re-describe how refundability works?
Well, let's see if I don't have a brain freeze this time and don't have to turn to my colleague or other colleagues who understand it. This would be assuming you don't earn enough money that you have any tax liability, so reducing your tax liability by $50 isn't helpful at all, but that you would in fact be able to get a refund of at least $50 if you had no tax liability. As opposed to coming up off the top of your tax, it would be something that you could file for and would be refundable. Okay, the yeas and nays.
And my apologies. Could we just? I know we've had other versions come up. Could we just restate what exactly? Because we have a new version that Representative Rayfield brought up, and we're looking at possibly combining refundability into this question. Can we just restate what we're looking at?
No, we're not. We separated out refundability. We're going to have a separate vote on making it refundable.
So the vote before us, or the motion before us, is whether or not the task force supports making the political tax credit refundable by itself, its own, yay or nay.
Okay.
So that's what we're going to do a roll call on right now.
On just whether the tax credit is refundable.
Yep, whether we support making it a refundable tax credit. Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. So, Senator Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Kenemer.
No.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Justin.
No.
Dave.
No.
Nikki. Margie.
Shall we come back around?
We'll keep going.
Oh, there's okay. Very good. Yeah. Thank you.
Mark. Andrew.
Yes.
Daniel.
Yes.
Kyle.
No.
Brad.
Yes.
Norman.
Yes.
And Seth?
Yes.
And Madam Chair?
Yes. I think I have 9 and 5.
I do as well.
Okay. Okay, so we will outline that we had a 9 to 5 support for the concept of refundability. Somebody asked about carried over, so I put it on the list. Is there really interest in working through that one? I don't want to.
You can remove it.
I don't see people jumping up and down over it, so let's just say we'll remove that. And again, we'll come back to the LC 2464 after we've had our discussion of public financing.
Before we delve into this conversation, uh-huh. Is it okay if we took a brief break? Would that be okay with people? I know it's going to be a big conversation, so.
Yes, it truly is. I'd like to come back at 10:15 if we could.
Okay.
Can folks take a little bathroom break here and come back at 10:15?
Go ahead and listen to it.
Okay. We're in recess for the moment. Maybe see who's we've lost on the phone or gained.
Sure. So let me see. Representative Kennemer?
Here.
And Representative Rayfield?
Here.
And Justin?
Yes, here.
And Dave?
I'm here.
And Nikki?
Here.
And Margie?
Here.
Excellent. And Andrew?
Yeah, I'm back on.
All right. Okay, I was wondering who had done that. Kyle?
Yes.
Brad?
Here.
Norman?
Here.
And Seth. Perfect.
Well, thank you all for hanging in. We are moving along and moving to the next bolded statement where people might have some edits to suggest or want to disagree with the text itself. As you note, it does acknowledge some complete opposition that exists on the task force, but the question, but the moving towards a little bit more exploration had been supported by a good cross section of the group at our last discussion. So, any edits or concerns about the potential edits or concerns about the bolded statement? Oh, come on.
Which statement are we on? Are we on the public financing one?
Yes, right. Public financing may be the one constitutionally appropriate way to make significant change in the source of campaign fundings. At this time, while there are some task force members that completely oppose public financing, additional exploration is supported by a cross-section of the group. So shall we move to a vote on whether that seems like a reasonable statement to make?
Bill Kennemer.
Yes, Representative Kennemer. Kennemer.
I'm completely opposed.
Okay. I'm gonna still kind of make everybody work through and give their no on the three suggestions that we have below, just in order to have a clear record about it. But I do understand that there's some folks for whom considering this is not.
And just for clarity, Representative Kennemer, are you the only one who is opposed to the statement, or is there any other individuals who oppose the statement.
This is Justin. I oppose it because of the second half of it. I don't think it's worth additional exploration.
Okay.
So let me ask it this way, just to see. This is meant to be a statement reflecting where the task force is. So it does acknowledge there are task force members who completely oppose public financing, and I think we need and we'll have. And so I would hate to see people vote no on making a statement that, in fact, some people completely oppose it. Do you see what I'm saying? This is not meant to be a statement in support of public financing, except in, you know, of the entire group, but to reflect the state of the group on this issue. So I guess my real question is, does it not represent what the outcomes have been of our discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Andrew.
Yes.
I would go so far as to say of the items, and we could take a vote down the line if you want to, but of the items we've been considering, I believe this has the broadest consensus of any of them. If that's not true, then obviously I retract that point, but I do feel, if that is the case, it's worth stating as such as we come out of the task force with these sorts of statements. I think it's worth saying this has the broadest consensus. If that indeed is the case, I believe it is.
I don't know that it's the broadest, but the reason I put that there is a cross section of the group was the way I had and that may not be perfect. So we could amend it to say a broad consensus of the group. We might want to check that with our votes on the specifics. But I certainly felt when we ended our discussion last time that there was far more than a majority interest in continuing to explore the issue. If that feels untrue.
Madam Chair, I think you're accurately summarizing and Andrew's comments as well. I'd actually like to recommend that we just flip the order of the options. It seems to me there's broad consensus, but there's a desire to further plumb specifics that could be considered, and you know, we can do it, or honestly we can have our professional team dig into it in a thorough fashion and present it back to the group, which is the suggestion of a research project carried out by the state. It's a practical next step on something we seem to have a cross-section of support for.
Yeah, and this is Dan Rayfield. I mean, the data is already out there. I think there's some other stuff kind of moving forward. In fact, we have a bill that we're looking to move in the next session on this. So I am not necessarily sold on the additional exploration. Mm-hmm. I like the first sentence and support that. You know, that's obviously, I think people know my personality. So that's where I'm at.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're sort of circling around whether we even approve this statement, and maybe we just take the note.
Move to the recommendation. Yes, right.
Yeah.
I think the folks who completely oppose public financing want that to be strongly reflected in any recommendation that we have. And if there's a way to amend this to make that clearer, I would certainly welcome it.
Gene, this is Brad. I guess what I'd like to do is, some is a number grandly misinterpreted. I'd actually like to just get it to a X number opposed, the balance supported.
Okay, so we can take that from our votes on each of the three items, or we can take it as a general statement.
I think I'd like to hear a vote on the general statement.
Okay, let's vote.
Okay, let's do it.
And so the general statement we are voting on is support or opposition to public financing in total.
No, I don't think that's accurate. Okay. I think what we're voting on is a statement that attempts to capture that there are some task force members who strongly oppose public financing, but that we are believe it deserves further exploration. That's essentially what this says.
So we're going to take a roll call on the statement. Very perfect. Good. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, Senator Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Kenemer.
No.
Representative Rayfield.
I do support it, but I don't think it needs further explanation. Yes.
Justin.
I'm happy to agree with Rep. Rayfield, but I'm a no for the same reason.
Okay. Dave.
Yes.
Nikki.
Yes.
Margie.
Go ahead.
We'll come back. Andrew.
Martin. No.
Martin's a no. I'm a yes. Okay. And again, I like the suggestion of either a vote or something that expresses what a consensus we have on this point. Thank you.
Okay. Daniel.
Yes.
Kyle.
I'm a yes. I think it adequately expresses our divisions.
Brad.
Yes.
Norman.
Yes.
Seth.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. It sounds like Margie's getting a little delay because she didn't hear me until.
She has a bit of a delay and has it on mute.
Yeah.
And so by the time she catches the delay and unmutes it, everything's happening.
We'll wait patiently because we want to get that. So the three ways that I've expressed the possibility of doing that further explanation or exploration that Representative Rayfield doesn't think we need is acknowledging that it was the discussion that we had had of the possibility of a pilot program. Delay of any state program in order to take the time to evaluate the outcome in Portland and elsewhere. I had added a little bit more specific take on that. This was a place in my perception for the task force that it was hard to generate the resources to do the research that we needed in between meetings, not for lack of willingness by our committee administrator and our task force administrator and their team, but there's certainly some limits that there are to how the time and investment that we can get together for that. As you may know, the legislature is looking at or is already structuring a new legislative research office, and I thought the possibility of putting this front load this on their list it was a request by the task force, a recommendation that this be one of the areas that they focus might put us in an advantage place. But I'm afraid without any additional investment at all, particularly as the remaining time of the task force, unless it's renewed by the legislature, consists of a legislative session when the legislative committee staff is particularly burdened with a lot going on, that it would be very difficult to kind of gather the information that folks were looking for. So that's by way of explanation of why I sort of added that extra paragraph to talk about the possibility of a particular investment on that. So maybe the first vote we want to do is to talk it would be on whether we think a pilot program should be established.
Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
Can I make a suggestion, and just in the interest of time, unless people have a lot they want to debate on these points, can we combine the votes of these three and just go around and say, yes, 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 no, yes, whatever, do all three in one go here?
Would people be comfortable with that?
Because they are distinct.
Yes.
Okay. I have a little, this is Daniel, I have a little discomfort with that just because they are such separate topics, about whether you want to study it whether you want to wait for Portland or whether you want to just recommend the legislature bring it forward.
I don't think it's being recommended that we take one vote that encompasses all three, but rather that you parse out your vote for each. Maybe we have whatever general discussion we're going to have, and then would people be ready to say yes or no pilot, yes or no evaluate, wait for Portland, yes or no proactively do a research project?
One question, three answers.
I have no problem with that approach. I actually would like to hear from Representative Rayfield. I understand that if you have a proposal to move into this area during the session, that it's not helpful to say, well, no, actually, we don't know enough to go figure it out, and, you know, let's have a study commission, let's wait for the study commission. I'm just interested in hearing a little more as to what you think the state of play is on this, and that will impact, I think, some of our thinking.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And this is Dan Rayfield. Basically, the concept that we worked with is very similar to what Portland's doing, except, you know, I think you guys heard my concerns about Portland's versions of not being fully funded, where people wouldn't utilize it. And basically, it's a low-dollar donor match program. And that is and would apply to state ledger races and the statewide offices. And so that is what we're looking at. Going to be filing here shortly, although we're going to be working on a few amendments to it, you know, just kind of as we go forward. But I think that there's enough data. This is being done in enough states, and with the implications or the impacts that it could have would be, you know, good for everyone involved. But I think if we, you know, worked hard, put our heads down, it's not something that we couldn't get accomplished in this next upcoming session, and that's why I am not. There's enough data about how this is working elsewhere. We don't need to look at Portland to see, you know, what's going on. We already have that data available to us. We just need to come together and in the session and find out what works best for Oregon.
Thank you.
Yes. And I think we could perhaps, and maybe this will be a separate vote that we could come back to. I don't think anybody probably wants to, you know, stick a knife in the heart of the effort that might come forward by having the legislature, having the task force say, we're not ready. The task force is not ready in the absence, you know, as a whole, in the absence of a draft to either endorse or not endorse, the task force, you know, isn't taking a position would make sense unless you meet during the session and get good information and feel like there's something there. And Representative Rayfield, you may want to try to make that happen. That would be useful. We could certainly acknowledge in our report that we understand that there's legislation being drafted, and, you know, we didn't have the opportunity to review it or to get all the data together that will support that effort. And so the fact that task force didn't take a position shouldn't be read as opposition or anything, or support, either one.
If you don't mind a follow-up, I'm just wondering if Representative Rayfield, if you believe this first option either is close to what you're trying to do, or if it can be modified to be close to what you're suggesting. We're obviously saying the task force may endorse the concept of passing a pilot program, and you know, we may have a different concept of when we originally discussed the concept of a pilot program, but you're saying a particular class of candidates receiving the benefit, et cetera. And I'm just wondering if this comes close or if it could be modified to include a range that would be the effort you're making.
Yeah, no, I thank you. I appreciate the consideration. I looked at the first version of the Pass the Pilot Program is closest to what we're looking at. However, I mean, really what I'd like to do is, you know, and I think, as I said, you guys know my personality, is kind of move forward. Rather than a pilot program, because I feel, you know, the other states and the other districts that are already doing this across the United States already have a lot of experience with this, and we have a lot of concrete data on what works and what doesn't and what creates the right incentives. So, if I were, you know, being selfish and looking at all the options, I would vote no on all of these.
and just have a recommendation from the task force that, you know, of how we stand on the concept as a whole, and then let the legislature make the decision on whether it should it be a pilot program, should we do the research? And that's kind of just letting the legislature know that, yeah, we do think that public financing, you know, may be one of the most constitutionally appropriate ways to do it, but just leaving that further discretion up to the legislature when we convene so that we can have an open dialogue and conversation about what's the best way going forward.
Thank you, Representative Rayfield. Others?
Lucy Bellis, and I just wanted, Representative Rayfield, I appreciate what you're doing. I think I'm glad you're looking at other programs, because I think speaking on behalf of non-affiliated voters, I think one point in looking at the Portland program, which is still yet to develop, is, of course, Portland races are nonpartisan, whereas other state races are partisan. And I know the New York City model, the New York City program has been argued as a model, but it hasn't really been effective in bringing in non-major party candidates. I just looked at the composition of the New York City Council. It has 50 members, which probably tells you something about New York City politics. But of those 50 members, 47 are Democrats and 3 are Republicans. So I don't see that, at least the New York City model, which again is often promoted as something to use, has really been that effective in bringing in non-major party candidates.
Oh, this is Norman.
Go ahead, Norman.
What I think we're discussing here is that there's quite a few different public financing schemes and variations on each of them, and we as a task force have not really had a chance to evaluate any of those or debate them, and we might want to sort of delete these three options in preference to another meeting of the task force, maybe during the session, in which we can debate that and have some recommendations on public financing if it seems feasible.
I actually would disagree on that. This is Daniel. And I think, you know, again, what we can do is at least take a statement of, you know, what our core principles are, where we feel about the concept of public financing, and where we feel maybe a next step would be to explore. And then if we approve that, I think it makes sense to come back and look at specific options about how you run a program, whether it's a voucher program or a match program or whatnot. But I think it's really crucial that members of the task force have a chance to vote on the core principles of whether public financing makes sense for our state, and then, like, what are some next possible options beyond that?
Well, we're certainly, Daniel, I think we've already done that with voting in favor of the bolded statement at the head of this section.
Mr. Brad, I guess if I boil this down, you know, we're not a legislative committee. Whatever we recommend will get the deserved attention of legislators trying to do best by our general principles. I don't think we have the time or the luxury to figure out, you know, strong majority votes on each element. If I were going to divide this in half, I'd just say that we strongly encourage the legislature to engage this issue, look at ways to pass public financing, and that barring that, invest resources into clarifying any unresolved questions for the previous session to re-engage the issue. That we think this is important, it shouldn't go away, and that the legislature ought to take this up. I also have to say, we can't design public financing systems around the concept of outcomes. It has to be about the concept of participation. That there are more Democrats in New York, I don't think would surprise anybody on the phone, and that non-affiliated candidates may have run and not earned majority support can't be an argument against the system. It just is an outcome of voters participating. I do think what we know from New York and other examples is that there's been an increased ability of third-party candidates, certainly
non-Republican, non-Democratic Party candidates' ability to participate, enter issues into the debate, and have a fairer participation in the process. So, I don't think we can let perfect be the enemy of the good. And I'm really encouraged that Representative Rayfield is moving this forward. And pretty much my short version of options would be we strongly encourage the legislature to engage us to look at passing legislation, and barring that in this session, invest additional resources to clarify any outstanding questions to get the job done.
This is Seth.
Go ahead, Seth.
Yeah, I wanted to confirm that interpretation of third-party success. We don't always look for winning in a first-past-the-post system as a measure of success. We see how much visibility and proportional sentiment we're able to develop, and this influences the outcomes of actual votes because the major parties often look to the uprising of popular support for third parties as things to adopt and co-opt. So that's a different measure of support. I think if you ask any Green Party member or member of the Rent is Too Damn High party in New York, they say it's been a success.
So I think from this discussion that we should maybe recess for just a second so that I could work with staff here to come up with a potential additional sentence that we might want to vote separately on. People may have different views about it, about moving the general statement to not just additional exploration, but in an additional sentence, sort of some of what Brad was doing, but I'm not fast enough. I need to see it visually. Encouraging the legislature to engage in the discussion and also and to utilize resources, to that whatever resources are needed to kind of resolve the issues. I feel like that's going to be a little bit of a stronger statement than this one, and so we should separate them. I'm certainly comfortable not being specific about what we think they ought to do. Obviously, the three that we had were a little bit nonspecific. And it also, I think, would, however, eliminate the notion of delaying discussion until Portland was over. And I guess I'd like to see where the group is around making an additional statement that way.
Yes.
And Erin has drafted something. I'd like a chance to look at it and then perhaps get it up on the screen if we can. So,
and I wanted to just add that, sorry, I think what a lot of members, including myself, are feeling is that we do want the ability to take a vote on whether the legislature should pass public financing. I mean, it's one thing for the legislature to explore public financing, but also to pass it is, I'm not sure there's enough. I mean, I don't know if there's enough votes there or not, but I think I certainly want the ability to be able to vote on a recommendation whether the legislature should move forward with, passage of such a reform in the next session. I do want that opportunity.
Well, we can see what the language looks like and whether it meets that. I think
are we going to take a break?
Let me hold for just a second and just make sure people are comfortable with taking this pause. My sense is that almost everybody on this task force has a challenge of not wanting to vote that the legislature should do something that none of us have had a chance to evaluate what that product looks like. On the other hand, we understand that the legislature is a legislature. They're going to do what it is that they do. I think, Daniel, you might think about whether you want to, promote a vote, yes or no, when I think a lot of people are going to be uncomfortable if it doesn't have some kind of parameters around it, whatever their personal ones are. And so it may be better simply to try to encourage the legislature to actively pursue something, perhaps tie it to our original statement of goals and values, and hope that would be taken up. And it certainly is possible for the task force to meet during the session and react to a specific piece of legislation and decide whether they have a majority supports that legislation moving forward, if you want to.
And Jean, I really appreciate that. I understand. I think part of what this task force can do can also prioritize what we hope the legislature spends time on, because there's lots mm-hmm. of things to spend time on. Mm-hmm. And if we strongly say this is an issue for their efforts, strong efforts, understandably, the details may shed any one of us from our original vote, and we certainly have the right to testify, speak to that fact, and note our opposition as it becomes a bill or moves. But right now, I think we're deciding, are we going to send a message that this task force believes this is worthy, not just of mention, but actual investment of time and efforts that Representative Grayfield has already taken. And I think on that, I feel very comfortable. I understand the final bill might not meet my liking, but I'm betting it'll be pretty close to something that's better than what we have now.
So
this
people,
is Dan Rayfield. I agree with what Brad said.
So can I recommend a five-minute recess here so Aaron and I can get something that might come up on the screen and be easier to absorb?
Okay.
Hearing no objection. Can the group come back to order? I was the unorderly one at this point. You will see on the screen now a possible additional sentence, a finding or a resolution, however you want to call it. So let's have discussion about that language and whether it reflects, if not everybody's views, if people have suggested edits. Understanding that group editing is always a dangerous, dangerous thing to do. So the task force recommends that the Oregon legislature move forward with active debate regarding a possible public financing system. The task force encourages application of the values described in our 2015 report and that investments be made where additional resources are needed to clarify outstanding questions. You don't have to say whether you love that you're going to vote yes on the statement or not to be to suggest possible edits if you think it's not clear or doesn't reflect something that was being discussed.
This is Daniel. I like the first sentence. I think it really does. It's a little stronger than the previous one. It does encourage the legislature to seriously take it up. But, you know, without people feeling like they have to commit to a specific policy.
I did want to, I obviously added the piece about our 2015 report and the kind of values statement that we came to agreement on, because I think I want the value of that debate and discussion, which we've come back to again and again, to be something that the legislature looks to as they're evaluating, the programs. It's not the only thing they probably will consider, but that we have something to add to the debate. And if they decide they don't know enough, not to just throw up their hands, I guess was my thought.
This is Bill Kenemer.
Yes, Representative Kenemer.
I guess the thing is the task force recommends, what it doesn't do is that it doesn't point out that it's not a unanimous.
Okay, I would propose to... hang on just a second.
Sorry.
I think we could either incorporate, by a vote of or something like that, or we could separately have a sentence to say this was a resolution was presented to the task force and it passed by this many votes for and this many against. So it would continue. My assumption is we would continue to have the first paragraph there, so it would make it clear that there are some task force members who oppose public financing, but we could also make sure that we put a statement of how many votes in favor and how many against there were to the second part of the mm-hmm. statement.
This is Brad. I would suggest that the language say passed by a vote of blank to blank. As opposed to a more general
statement about some people being opposed. We know, obviously, some people are opposed, and that'll happen in the legislature.
Do you think
and
that?
Secondly, I kind of think we have two quick paths, and I really appreciate the effort on this. I appreciate the language that's put forward. I'd say bad language, if it passes, we'll have an accomplishment in our hands. We'll say this is well worthy of legislative effort. I think I heard something from one of the members before, and I'm sorry, I didn't catch the name. You know, we might want to put two votes up. A vote with the language as presented, and a second would be that, and I'll summarize, I don't see the language on the screen, but would be something as simple as, you know, we encourage actively engaging this and passage of a public binding measure that comports with the values spelled out by this task force. And that's stronger because we're actively saying, yep, pass something. We know we might not like it specifically, but generally the task force believes this is important enough to move forward. And, you know, we may not like the votes on the two versions, but maybe something to that effect, or maybe we ought to just go right to a vote on the language you have before us.
So this is Diane. Just to clarify, is this language being added kind of to our preamble that we already adopted?
That would be my proposal, that we keep the paragraph that we already had a vote on, and this would be a separate.
And would it replace these three?
Yes, and I think we would assume, well, let's make a separate question in people to resolve whether the three specifics underneath there would be would not be. We would not take a vote on those.
Okay. I like the language that you all constructed.
It doesn't sound like there's an amendment to that language. And I'm not ignoring your question, Brad. I know for myself, I don't know if it's true for all folks, that to recommend passage feels without in the absence of an understanding of what the package is would be something I would be hesitant to do, and I don't want to send a message that when I say encourage, I don't really mean or recommend that they move forward. I don't really mean that because I didn't say they should pass it. You know, it feels like a mixed message. It would be my concern. Are there others that want to speak to that issue, whether we should have an additional vote about adding the words passage?
I would propose we not do that. I don't think we should vote on that.
I think that's right.
Yeah, Jean, can I hear from other? I'm fine with the approach you're describing. I just know that it was brought up as a question before we.
Sure, absolutely.
I prefer to move forward with the proposal as you've outlined.
Okay.
Well, let's see where we are on that additional language, which is on the screen. Obviously, we have a record of it. Up until just that paragraph, the one that starts with the task force recommends and ends clarify outstanding questions, not the specifics below. Can we get yays and nays on that?
All right. Senator Rosenbaum.
Yes.
Representative Kenemer.
Statement isn't shared on the screen.
I'm sorry, I hit the wrong button. This is Bill Kettmer. Am I on?
You are.
I don't support public finance.
Okay, good. Thank you. So Nikki's indicating she doesn't see that paragraph. Are others having that problem?
Yes, it's no longer on the screen.
So our assistant is on the phone. He may be querying Olus to see what's happening.
Querying media here. Okay.
They're working on it. We have a...
It's back.
Is it back up?
You know, the whole system was crashing periodically yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah, it's up now.
Okay. So then...
Okay, good.
Representative Kenner was a no. Representative Rayfield?
Yes.
Justin?
No.
Dave?
Yes.
Nikki?
Yes.
Margie?
No, we do not support public financing.
Andrew?
Maybe we'll circle back around. Andrew, are you on mute?
We'll circle back. Daniel?
Yes.
Kyle?
No.
Brad?
Yes.
Norman?
Yes.
Seth?
Seth, you there?
Yes.
Thank you.
And can you hear me?
Yep. Yes.
Now we do.
And to circle back to Andrew. I don't know if we've lost him. Somebody did go off. And Madam Chair.
Yes.
Four excused.
We may want to try again with Andrew. I do want to be accurate with the folks that we've, you know, that we've had, and we might, if folks would be comfortable with allowing his vote to come in a little bit later, if we get him back, we would, in the absence of Andrew's vote, we would report this and make it part. The task force recommends by a 9-4. Vote that, and going forward, and it would, depending on his, we would include, it would be 10-4, it would be 9-5. Okay, good work, folks.
Do we want to confirm that we are not going to, we're going to remove the other?
Yes, and so the other three specific recommendations will be eliminated. Does anybody have any objection to that? Okay. Good work, folks. How much time do we have till noon? Do we have
till one?
We have till one. Oh my lord, these people are gonna have a stroke when they think of that. I'm not gonna take another break yet. Do we have an interest in looking at the LC 2464, which adds to the current tax credit the potential of delivering vouchers to personal income taxpayers who don't use the tax credit. This is, I guess, a form of refundability, because it doesn't apply to, you know, this was new to us as well just last night. So, and I read it but didn't retain the whole thing. This would be for people under $100,000 on joint, or $50,000 for other returns. It really is sort of refundability for a group at $100,000 or below. So does that take it off of our list?
I'm sorry, I'm confused. Is this an LC or is this?
Yes, it's an LC that's in your packet.
Which one is it?
LC 2464.
Oh, I see.
It has a second page.
I would like to look at it, but not having any time to read it, I think today is the wrong day to do so.
Okay. Okay. So we're taking no position on 2464. Hopefully we'll track it as part of the record and see what comes up. The concerns that we have about refundability and administration of a check back thing, you know, can be noted and used during the course of discussion.
And Madam Chair, just to let you know and the task force members know that this is something to have on our radar to make sure we're aware of during session, and if and how this measure moves in House revenue or wherever committee it does end up in, I will make sure that all of our task force members are aware that this is an active discussion or is not an active discussion. So mostly it was put out there so everybody's aware of it, that this is one of the concepts in this issue area that is going to be at least introduced into the next legislative session.
Okay, let's move to our the transparency section, as I have kind of labeled it in my own mind. Let me just kind of review what I had done as a summary. First, the bolded language, which I'll be asking whether it appropriately describes our discussion. Oregon has long relied on transparency to be the disinfectant of our political system, allowing the public to determine whether or not contributors are having too much influence, rather than relying on limits on donors to keep influence levels down. We identified three problems with our reporting system. First, it's difficult for small parties, new candidates, and volunteer treasurers to develop sufficient expertise in compliance to avoid unintentional errors. Second, penalties are insufficient when deliberate failure to fine or file timely are involved. Third, the public is not aware enough of the information to be found in ORSTAR to have it serve as intended. And then I had, from our discussion, developed several potential administrative recommendations and one legislative recommendation. This was a wide-ranging discussion, and I'm hoping I captured it well, but let's talk about the bolded language first and see if it, if you feel like it reflects the discussion that we had.
So this is Kyle. I have rather a lot to say about this.
Okay.
We might want to take it in pieces. So let me just look at the first paragraph first. I'm troubled by the language concentrating on influence, because I don't think having too much influence is what we're trying to get at here. I think this is an issue of corruption, not one of influence. Influence is what we want our elected officials, we want them to be responsible to the voters, and that's by the voters influencing them. Influence is not a bad thing. Corruption is.
Are there other thoughts about that?
The wording to be undue influence.
So rather
that
than
would improve it.
Uh-huh. Others?
I like undue influence. That works for me. This is Justin.
Okay. Others?
This is Bill Kemmer. I like undue influence.
Okay.
This is Brad. I can certainly live with undue influence.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so then would I assume, hearing not a disagreement with that, that in the second half of that sentence, rather than relying on limits on donors to keep influence levels down, do we want to just eliminate that part and not have to try to figure out a way to talk about influence, bad influence as opposed to okay influence? Maybe that rather than through.
I would support taking out the rather than sentence, just because I think both are really good options to discouraging undue influence. Both limits and transparency are powerful tools, and I don't think it's fair to imply that we're choosing one over the other.
It's an either or. Okay.
I actually have concern about that.
Okay.
Specifically, we do rely on transparency and reporting to reduce undue influence, and we certainly do it as a contrast to limits. And we'll have later on a great debate about the impact of limits actually increasing radically the influence of outside independent expenditures. So I think this accurately reflects the current state of play, and it's important to underline that that is something that is at least an area we might have broad agreement on, that the best way to reduce undue influence is through accurate reporting, and that we are relying on it over other means.
Diane. I don't agree with that statement, and I would have deep concerns with putting that impression out there, because I think my view is that we have a system, while not perfect, but is one of the better transparency systems that I am aware of in the country. It has served Oregonians well, and it can indeed be improved. But to then add on to that, or draw the conclusion that that was a conscious policy choice, mm-hmm. that was the only thing we needed to do to address what I think is a widespread feeling among voters that we need to do more than that, would be misleading. And I don't think that is the majority sentiment of this group.
Yeah, I strongly agree with that, especially since this task force already made a recommendation to amend the Oregon Constitution to adopt limits.
Yes, I understand that, and I strongly disagree with that recommendation, because it will promote rampant independent expenditures, which has happened in every state where we've passed stricter campaign finance rules, as we've pretended to address the issue of the influence and actually have created a sanctuary and profound place where the impact is far and above anything we lose by not having limits on but candidates. Frankly, we disarm candidates and political parties from being able to actively compete with big money and dark money, and we enable it even if we don't realize it.
But
we don't have to have that debate now. We'll come to this later. But it is something that I this is our current means. If we want to delete it, fine. Get unanimity on this point, fine. Move forward on it. But I cannot agree with the concept that our current approach is not what we've found as a safe harbor to universally affect the issue of undue influence and not trade it out for something that would have actually a more profound impact on bringing that influence into our system. But again, that's a debate for later in our conversation.
I just want to make sure that we know the question that we're discussing at the moment. And Norman, I'll get right to you. So the question remains whether we eliminate the clause after contributors are having too much undue influence, whether we do a period there and stop the sentence there, or whether we include rather than relying on limits on donors to influence levels, to keep influence levels down. So just to make sure that's clear for everybody, wanted to hear from other people. So Norman, go.
So I'm agreeing to eliminating that clause, because I think it's a specific solution to the undue influence that we're not debating now, that we're trying to agree on a general statement, and we can have that other debate later. Eliminating this rather than clause, I think, helps us get by this paragraph anyway.
Madam Chair, Bill Cameron?
Yes.
One of the ways to maybe do this, because what you're talking about here is history, and if you simply, after too much undue influence, said simply rather than relying on limits and eliminated the rest of that sentence, that would be a historically accurate statement. That's what we've chosen to do, is use transparency rather than donor limits.
So I feel like I've heard, some varying views of whether, you may be right, Representative Kenmer, that is. And I think that's probably what I was thinking, and when I put it in there, that's been the general discussion that's happened prior to this, but perhaps we don't have to reflect that history and getting the limits piece into this altogether, again, makes it more difficult to get us to our conclusions around transparency. I could certainly understand that. Is there anybody else that wants to speak to that question? Anybody want to argue that we absolutely need to have make the contrast to limits in this sentence for them to be comfortable with it?
It's Diane. I would prefer to leave the language in, but I can live with removing it. So.
Sounds like Brad also was in that position.
Yep. Correct.
In the interest of moving along, I'm going to recommend, unless there's objection, that we end the sentence with undue influence and take the rather part out. Is there any objection? Thank you, folks. So I'm certainly aware that there could be more than three problems. giving a number is always a little bit dicey. But there were three areas where I thought we had the most discussion of concern. Do those three reflect in your mind the discussion that we had? These are problems to be solved or addressed.
Bill Kenimer here. I think this is a good selection of them. I would think in the second one, penalties may be insufficient is better than simply saying sufficient, making it a universal, because I'm not sure all those penalties are wrong, but they certainly do need to be studied and increased in certain areas.
Folks have a reaction to are insufficient or may be insufficient?
This is Justin. I would support maybe.
Is there any objection to maybe? Well, let's make that edit to it, maybe. So shall we have a vote? We did on the others on this statement, which now reads, Oregon has long relied on transparency to be the disinfectant of our political system, allowing the public to determine whether or not contributors are having undue influence. Three problems with our reporting system have been identified. First, it is difficult for small parties, new candidates, and volunteer treasurers to develop sufficient expertise in compliance to avoid unintentional errors. Second, penalties may be insufficient when deliberate failure to file or file timely are involved. Third, the public is not aware enough of the information to be found in ORSTAR to have it serve as intended.
This is Kyle. I mostly like this now, but the third point I may want to have split off because I disagree with it. Last year, I think it was last December's meeting, I had mentioned some data. There was a research study done where there were groups created and given access to information about hypothetical ballot measure, and one of the groups had information about campaign finance disclosures, and within that group, only 10% of the people even view that information. I think the public actually doesn't care about this information very much. So for us to say that they're not aware enough, I think is maybe a bit of an overstatement. They might not want to be aware of it. I think this matters very little to most people.
Well, I take your point. Maybe it's being splitting hairs a little bit, but do we want to say it doesn't matter whether they're aware or not?
Madam Chair, I obviously would be troubled with that because that would actually undermine the value of doing anything we're doing here. Hopefully we're doing it for the public and for trying to create systems of accountability. There may be some people that don't care. There may be some people that do care. It seems to me that we're saying it needs to be a better system with better penalties and better access for the public if they choose not to use it or appreciate it. I think there's plenty of evidence in every media story, news story, et cetera, that there's at least some public interest on this point, and if not growing. And I think we should probably move to a vote on this, and hopefully it's close enough that a strong majority can support these statements.
This is Dan Rayfield. I would agree with that statement.
Okay. Let's go ahead and do the yeas and nays on the statements, unless there's other important stuff folks want to add in.
Could I? I'm sorry to throw a little wrench in the works. This is Diane. But when I read this, it almost sounds like an indictment of the current system. I don't know whether anyone else sees it that way, but because it relies so heavily on the problems, it really doesn't have a strong statement that says that we have a largely successful model. I don't know whether there's other language somewhere else in the report that I'm missing, but it just sounds to me like we're saying, well, we rely on transparency, and then these are the problems. It doesn't ever say that the Eurostar system has been an excellent means of providing transparency, but that it can and should be improved. And I wonder if people would be open to inserting a statement like that so that at least we've put out there that we've got a good model, but what we want to do is make it better.
You know, maybe like a way to achieve that, because I agree with you, Senator Rosenbaum. This is Daniel from Common Cause. Maybe a way to achieve that would be after the word influence, we have a period after the word undue influence. And then maybe the next thing would say something along the lines of, you know, our transparency system has a lot of strong core elements to it, and there are three areas of potential improvement that the task force has identified. In that way,
I mean, I don't want to edit by committee. I wrote something too, but
oh, okay.
I am not opposed to that, and I do want to hear from the rest of the group. I don't want to understate what I think were some serious concerns that were raised, and so you know getting to that appropriate ground. We were asked to make recommendations for change that we thought would accomplish some things. We I think identified some really important tensions that are problematic, and if we're a little too effusive about how it's all working now, there may be a temptation to back, you know, to say, oh, good enough, you know, close enough is good enough, would be my concern. Others on that subject, Aaron is working with a little bit of language here that we can put up if there's real interest in adding.
So this is Norman.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in front of three problems, we could say something like, well, Eurostar is one of the best systems in the country. Three problems with our reporting system had been identified.
This Margie? Is Margie. Mm-hmm. The one thing that that I'm concerned about is that Eurostar was designed to be able to have campaigns and PACs report accurately their activity. That's what it was designed for. And so it sounds to me like now we're saying, in addition to what it was designed for, we believe there are some other opportunities to do some more transparency and get more people involved in looking at the data that by law has to be reported. I don't know any way you're going to make people be more interested if they're not interested.
Sure, that's certainly true. I think we have found that the way information is available kind of changes levels of interest, but not always. And I think you're right there. Others, again, Aaron is working on a little bit of language
Gene, this is Brad. I think there's certainly some value in, you know, some version of the three folks who offered up language. I wouldn't have it go on extensively, but basically we should know that we've got a good system, and but we've identified areas for improvement. It's a good transition between sentences and something else.
Right. Can we put this up, or is that going to be tough?
I can't. Okay. Go from here to there.
Okay. Let me read you the language, and it'll be on a written record, on a oral record or audio record. So, if we screw it up later, you can hold us accountable. The ORSTAR system has been an excellent means of providing campaign finance expenditure and contribution activity to the public. However, it can and should be improved in three areas. And then you take out the three problems that have been identified.
That's fine.
Great.
As a user of ORSTAR, I don't want to call it excellent.
What about large, what about largely successful?
Largely successful?
That's a good compromise.
Okay, good. Yes, we're a thoughtful group, and we don't go with excellence or being thrilled. We have a thing in my office where Gene is never thrilled. So, okay, thank you so much. So let's take a vote. Get the yeas and nays on this statement.
Amended statement. All right.
Could you maybe just read it through so we know what it says now?
Oregon has long relied on transparency to be the disinfectant of our political system, allowing the public to determine whether or not contributors are having undue influence. The ORSTAR system has been a largely successful method of providing campaign finance expenditure and contribution activity to the public. However, it can and should be improved in three areas. First, it is difficult for small parties, new candidates, and volunteer treasurers to develop sufficient expertise in compliance to avoid unintentional errors. Second, penalties may be insufficient when deliberate failure to file or file timely are involved. Third, the public is not aware enough of the information to be found in ORSTAR to have it serve as intended. And I will acknowledge that, you know, there could have been a little different way of saying that didn't involve the awareness. But if folks can live with that, that will help us move forward. Okay, the yeas and nays.
Right. Senator Rosenbaum.
Yes.
Representative Kinnemer.
Yes.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Justin.
Yes.
Dave.
Yes.
Nikki.
Yes.
Margie.
Yes.
Andrew.
Yes, I'm back on the call.
Excellent.
Yes, and could I possibly, I'm sorry, I was off the call when you had the earlier vote. Could you possibly record my tripartite vote on the prior question as yes, no, yes?
Well, unfortunately, we screwed you up and didn't take it that way. I will come back and read you the language that we came up with, and then you can cast your vote. I do want to come back and to you.
Oh,
on
okay.
That.
Okay. Sorry.
We diverted to on a new path. So thank you,
Daniel.
Yes.
Kyle.
No.
Brad.
Yes.
Norman.
Yes.
Seth.
Yes.
And Chair. Madam Chair.
Yes.
All right.
We appreciate you, Kyle. This is our closest to unanimous vote we've ever had, I think, perhaps. So I think that provides a good pathway, whether or not we want to add the specificity of what's in the next underneath that. As I say, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, listed possible administrative recommendations and one legislative recommendation. So I might ask if there are additional ones beyond greater educational opportunities for candidates and treasurers should be offered. That's something obviously the Secretary of State could ask for more money if they felt they needed it, but could make a priority. That there be some kind of consumer user analysis completed that allows the Elections Division to hear directly from the people affected about how the public, but also users, about how OrStar works. The recommendation, I think, came from Seth that we open up the source code. So I hope I'm saying this the right way, so you'll have to correct me. So a wide variety of media and activists can work through the data themselves as opposed to being limited to the queries that we provide. The Secretary of State's office should create an application program interface to increase the public's ability to get into OrStar. And Elections Division should regularly make public what fines are assessed against campaigns. Now, those address different issues. So were there other administrative things that you feel like I missed that came up in the discussion that were important to people? Okay, let's look at the at them one by one, and just really quickly, unless you want to do again what Andrew had suggested for the last one, which is kind of a get ready to do a yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, and just quickly get through them all. Shall we take them one at a time?
Secretary, I just have one other administrative recommendation.
Sure.
That we had discussed.
Okay.
Is giving more authority to the Secretary of State when there are penalties for failure to file or whatever it is, making sure that the Secretary's team has more administrative power is something that we had discussed.
So I think we had talked about, so I did have the one legislative recommendation, which goes to an expanded enforcement system should be developed and funded in order to address repeat offenders and or deliberate efforts to avoid timely reporting. We also had discussed some enforcement tools, additional deadlines and so forth. I was kind of capturing all that in one, but maybe it should be separated out. Nikki, does that legislative recommendation capture for you, or do you think we thought there was something they could do on their own without the legislature giving them more authority?
I think with that legislative recommendation, just making sure enforcement team, or I know we had asked your staff after one of the meetings how many people there were to investigate, and they said three, and so I would just make sure we can either keep, I don't care where it's at, but I would just like to make sure that
okay.
If it is a resource question, making sure that it's not just
do more and
with less.
Yes, with less, right.
Not just
right.
Enforcement system, but enforcement team, enforcement staff.
If we could for now, let's wait till we get down to the legislative recommendation and maybe we add some language in that helps identify, you know, the department should not be expected to do more or whatever. Let's wait till we get to that one. Would that be okay?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay.
I wonder if anybody is...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I wonder if these administrative suggestions, well, at least from my viewpoint, are not likely to be very controversial. I wonder if we could just combine them under the work group also suggested the following administrative recommendations and then just itemize them out as they are.
Unless somebody immediately opposes
them. Right. Time and also get through this.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's a good thought. Let's make sure that everybody's comfortable with that. Is there any one of these that people would like to break out and have a separate vote on for some reason?
Hi, this is Kyle. I think the questions about open source and making a programming interface are a little bit confused.
Okay.
The API would make the data more available and accessible to the public. Open sourcing would be a separate issue. And my reservation about open sourcing is that it may make it easier to find security flaws in the system.
Okay.
This is Justin. I was going to vote no on that one item as well about opening the source code. That needs more study in my mind.
I wanted to reply. This is Seth. I wanted to reply to Kyle.
Sure.
Potentially.
Go.
So the open source thing wasn't to make the data available. It was to allow the smaller parties and other groups to know how the system works, to ensure compliance, and to do security auditing.
Madam Chair, I'm going to suggest we segregate out that one paragraph, vote on the remaining four, and then have a discussion about that, a way to fix that one.
Is that the only one that people were leaning or having a concern that they might need to vote against? Okay.
I'm just concerned regarding time. A lot of us have a hard deadline at the 1 o'clock time frame, and I'm sure we can reschedule to do more, but at least let's get done what we can get done.
Not too much more time to do that. I have places to go and things to books to read and a retirement to go back to. Sorry. Okay, so let us take yays or nays on the first two and on greater educational opportunities, a consumer analysis, creating an application programming interface, and regularly making public what fines are assessed against campaigns. Are you comfortable with a group, a collective vote on that?
Could you just call for any dissent votes?
Yeah.
But again, say that.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Any objection to making those four recommendations? Okay. Thank you. Thank you for helping me do this more efficiently. Recommended language around opening the source code. I'm sorry that I didn't get this out sooner. Seth, you might have had some helpful way of saying it that would have been a little less controversial to people.
Maybe.
Do you want to...
Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to agree with Seth that this is not about the data,
okay,
but it's about making public the whole process and assuring the security through public exposure. That's the whole value of open source software, is that it can be audited by lots of people and thus made better. So in general, I'm in favor of the concept of open source for that purpose, but not for access to the data itself. The API that we've already voted on is what makes access to the data through third-party people.
Okay. What if we just ended with should open up the source code? What if we just said that and no more?
Yeah, I think that would help.
Is there objection to that, so that we should take a vote on it in that shortened format? So I don't attribute anything good to it. That we should open up the source code. Doesn't sound like there's any opposition, so we'll add that to the list in its shortened format. Okay, the legislative recommendation that we had was an expanded enforcement system should be developed and funded. And I have an extra proposition in there, so let's take out two and just leave it at in. My mother-in-law used to say those people live out all out in through there. And my son once said, Grandma loves her prepositions. Funded in order to address repeat offenders and or deliberate efforts to avoid timely reporting. So is there additional detail that we would like to do? We could certainly say Elections Division leadership recommended that at least three FTE be added in order to do that. I felt this was general enough that a variety of ideas might get supported by it. But
this is Diane, and I'm sorry if this seems like a quibble, but the word deliberate does seem to suggest that you would have to determine the intent to not report, which might be difficult to do, and I don't know what a better word is, but it seems like it would be very hard to prove that somebody intended not to report. I don't know how much that word matters, but...
This is Kyle. I think the issue actually is very important. Because of the complexity, I don't want to penalize people who are making innocent mistakes.
Still here.
Yes.
You know, you could eliminate or the words deliberate effort to do and just put avoiding timely reporting. And then the other word that I would quibble with is enforcement system. Maybe it should be effort.
Here we have an idea of changing system to effort.
And then eliminate...
In order to address repeat offenders or efforts.
Timely reporting.
Efforts to avoid timely reporting. Others?
I don't know.
I think for me, the only thing that I want to just make sure is that there's some, if we say efforts or systems, that the SOS office has adequate support staff or support tools or whatever that looks like. I think it might be beneficial to call it out more specifically if that's what they need.
So something to the effect of should be developed and adequately funded and staffed?
That's good.
That's
good.
I mean, I would hate to ignore the tension that we were talking about, that innocent. Well, we could take out deliberate but and just leave it with or efforts to avoid timely reporting. If you're avoiding it, you're probably doing it somewhat deliberately. And so there's going to be an aspect of intent, you know, involved in that. We certainly could add a sentence which says, you know, the task force understands that, in a non-criminal in a civil side penalties, which these are, it's very difficult to segregate intentional from unintentional error. And I know that Representative Rayfield has looked at an audit system that hopefully would develop some patterns around that. But would folks be comfortable with a sentence that just acknowledges that problem as we understood it, so it doesn't seem as if we're ignoring the difference?
Gene, I would think we could actually... I'm very sympathetic to this, and I deal with it at the Federal Election Commission. There's actually a quip that's with Federal Election Commission filing that, you know, file wrong before you file late. And it's somewhat frustrating because, at least in contracts I have for using hotels, there's a concept of force majeure, that it's an act of God, power outage, so my computer can't file the report. A member of the family passes away right before I'm supposed to file. There is at least a concept of the ability to make a case for enforcement. And while I understand the difficulty of it, even if
all we did was say that, you know, barring those kinds of issues that come up under force majeure, that should be something that the state takes into consideration and goes, okay, I mean, it's the same as a prosecutor is given some latitude in who they prosecute and how they prosecute them. It doesn't have to be terribly complicated. It may be overly simple, but even if the idea that a recognized power outage on the night you're supposed to file a report is reason to accept that it wasn't a deliberate act and best faith effort to make, you know, and in rulemaking I do deal with, there's two concepts that are fairly common, one which they don't have, which is the notion of a just plain, completely reasonable exemption, and then secondly, safe harbors that are identified that if you do this, well, you've at least tried, and we're going to recognize that in the enforced action. So I don't want to make it overly complex, but I also don't think it's so complex that we couldn't say it's something that ought to be addressed in our rulemaking.
Well, that seems to me to be an argument for leaving the language as it is, to say we want to have an effort that addresses repeat offenders, and deliberate efforts doesn't necessarily mean that we have to, you know, get down into their heart of hearts. And I mean, there could be some kinds of lines drawn, and like you say, a safe harbor or whatever, but that they continue to consider ways to get at this. The way may not be to create an intent standard that has to be proved one way or the other. It may be some other means, and certainly it's one of the reasons that repeat offenders was an idea to think of in audits, as Representative Rayfield has talked about. I'm going to ask whether we could go with an expanded enforcement effort should be developed and developed, funded, and staffed in order to address repeat offenders and or potential ways to identify deliberate efforts to avoid timely reporting, and just kind of leave it open as to what that might be. I think there was consensus that we'd like to get at that. We just, you know, don't yet have a good recommendation to make. Aaron is editing here and will read.
I kind of join with the senator in having concern about deliberate. I just don't. I think we put a huge problem there, and I think whether it's deliberate or it's not deliberate, it's still wrong to not have timely reporting.
Mm-hmm. And so, if we take out deliberate and leave it at efforts,
some of the way the reporting is done by some of the independent groups, they report late and without penalty, and therefore they never accept, they never have public responsibility for their involvement. Never. They often do not have a public responsibility for their involvement in campaigns.
Thank you. Let's have Aaron read where our statement is at the moment and see if it. Be developed, funded, and staffed in order to address repeat offenders or other efforts to avoid timely reporting.
Okay, so the statement would read, an expanded enforcement effort should be developed, funded, and staffed in order to address repeat offenders and or other efforts to avoid timely reporting.
So are there objections to that, or do we need to take a vote?
Are you looking for amendments or support or opposition?
I think at this point we should move to a support or opposition.
Okay, I oppose.
Okay, so we should
have a vote. I believe the discouragement of political activity would far outweigh the benefit of the increased reporting.
Okay. Anybody else? Is there anybody else that would be a no? Okay, we'll consider the votes to be in favor with one opposing vote.
Madam Secretary?
Yes.
If we're done with that, maybe this is an appropriate point to consider my concept submitted last night as a legislative recommendation.
disclosure system?
I'm looking for our documents about that. Actually, I would like to, because this original chart was made before we had the other LCs, I'd like to pull this together with the other LCs for discussion, if we could. I'd like to get through the chart, and then we can come back to a couple more of the of that, including yours, Norman.
As you wish.
Okay. And if you could also give me a little a privilege, what I think we should do is, because we have some legislative options to look at in terms of the issue of requiring attribution for campaign materials, perhaps the quickest thing we could do and then have a minute's break again would be to I'm just really asking for a revote around the contribution limits amendment to the Constitution, such as SJR 5. That was a request of several members of the task force, and we do have a slightly different membership. So I just want to, you know, take a second vote to see if there has been any real change in the sense of the group on that. I think we've debated it a good deal, and unless there's somebody new to the task force who would like to hear more about it, could folks simply go on the record again as to where they are on amending the Constitution to allow for contribution limits?
Madam Chair, I would ask that we have a much longer debate on this. A lot has changed over the last year, including new members, and I am deeply troubled by the concept of anything that disarms one group in the form of something. I understand that public wants something, but our obligation is to make sure what we deliver accomplishes the goal. And the goal is not for limits. The goal is to change and improve our system of participation. And limiting candidates, limiting political entities, parties, is a very defective approach to the concern about the corrupting influence of money, because it completely leaves us open and exposed to the massive influence and influx of independent expenditures. To do anything without recognizing that and actually solving that problem first is, it may feel good, it may address public concerns, but it actually makes the problem worse. And until we overturn Citizens United, we're not going to make our democracy better. We will think we are, but we are actually headed in exactly the opposite direction. I deal with state parties and other states, both sides of the aisle, where they find themselves exposed to huge onslaughts of independent expenditures, and they have candidates and committees that are severely limited in their ability to defend themselves or respond. I have to do things that national conservative groups don't have to do when they attack my candidate and my team, and I know the same is true for folks across the aisle. So I'm very concerned about just moving to a vote that we have not actually. I just think it's an issue we have to have a much, much deeper discussion on.
Well, I will confess to the fact that I did not expect to see a substantial shift in position from the places that most of the task force members were, so didn't anticipate that would necessarily be the case, which is why I felt that we didn't need to go through again much of good debate that we had. I did note about the Multnomah County Charter vote. We could certainly add a sentence to that also acknowledges the, you know, continued strong opposition. I expected that to be a narrow division. Perhaps I was wrong, and perhaps the sentiment would change if we had a more fulsome discussion. I'm concerned if we get diverted onto a long discussion around the contribution limits piece, that it's going to be very difficult to get to some very specific pieces of legislation that might be there that you all want my assumption is that we're still a very divided task force on that issue, and unless there's reason to believe that we have changed that.
That may be the case, Madam Chair, but I've got to say this is a core issue that we have a significant dispute, and we are strong supporters of campaign finance limits, but done in a kind. We wouldn't pass a limit that said one party has limits and another party doesn't have limits.
Right.
And to enact campaign finance reform and limits on candidates and political parties in the state of Oregon
absolutely exposes us to massive, undue, corrupting influence of independent expenditures. It frankly invites it. It's why we have so few and so little independent expenditures, except for on the federal side, because of the limits on federal races. And to move forward, I wasn't here for the previous debate. I'm a new member to the committee for the previous debate. And I think it's an issue, and we now are looking at a court that is highly unlikely to change in any means or way that would decrease the influence and effect of Citizens United. And that's not just a partisan Democratic influence. The influence was seen well in the Republican primaries of independent expenditures as it was in the Democratic primaries.
Mm-hmm. Could I ask for a five-minute break?
Mm-hmm.
So folks would rather have the break now, then we can come back to the question of whether we have a second round or we just accept the outcome, the previous outcome that we had around that, which I am certainly prepared to do. And unless there's an objection, we'll take a five-minute break.
Okay.
I got off soft mute a minute ago in order to move towards this. I'm going to call us back to order. I feel like we're high-centered not on the question of whether there should be limits or not, but whether the Constitution should be amended to allow us to potentially set limits, which may be a very different question, but it was the one that we had before. But we're high-centered over whether or not to actually have a vote on that or not. I am absolutely happy to and might want to make the argument for our holding that and not making requiring a vote on that today, because we have absences, including the newer people who are on the task force. I know that nobody who is opposed to this wants to have a repeat version of a recommendation, and nobody who wants to re-endorse this would like to have a statement of we continue to be completely divided on this subject. The legislature is not going to act on any kind of constitutional amendment, I believe, unless there was a fairly substantial majority vote in this task force, and it we can leave that the task force does not end, and a draft constitutional amendment, just like before, will be introduced at the request of the Secretary of State, Jean Atkins, who nobody will care about come January 1st, and the vehicle would be there if the excitement developed for some reason, and all of the I think good reasons, although I'm in favor myself of the good reasons that Brad brought forward, don't win the day. I'm not sure that we're going to have a productive discussion. I don't think we're going to have the number of votes that will reflect the fact of the new membership anyway, because people are gone, and I would really like people's agreement that we skip having a vote on this, that not be read as either continued endorsement or less endorsement than we had before. It's a neutral statement of we're not prepared to take on the question again and add anything for now, and the group can take it up again at a later date. Do I have objection to that? Hard to do when I come across like this is what I want to do, and I haven't done that very often in this process, so I hope you'll give me a little space to try to move us along, knowing that I'm an advocate for it, it wasn't why I put it on here. It was simply to kind of rest the question again, but it sounds like that'll be a contentious discussion just to get us to there, so I think we should put it aside.
The only thing I disagree with is that no one will care about you.
No.
You will always care.
Thank you.
I agree with you, Diane. I'm sorry to jump in so in the way I did, but I do appreciate your consideration on this, Gene, and the approach you're taking makes sense to me.
Are there others? Okay. So we're kind of going back up the chart. So no action one way or the other on this one. I just need one of my notes. We have the other section that, of the chart was our system of transparency is hindered by our constitutional proscription on requiring attribution for campaign materials. We're going to want to see whether that's a comfortable finding to make. We have a rather specific, or a little bit more specific potential recommendation under that. An effort should be made to develop legislative options that would meet constitutional standards, but would make those distributing anonymous campaign materials more easily held to reporting standards, which is the issue that I kind of complained about at our last meeting. We have two LCs. Representative Rayfield, are you back on and available to talk to us about these?
Yeah, and I'm trying to navigate my computer here.
Okay.
Essentially, there are just two different versions of trying to get at the same issue. And one of them, basically talks about, trying to open it up here, where, you know, instead of, you know, the kind of constitutional issue about, you know, saying requiring someone to say, you know, paid for by, you can have one, the sponsor of this communication is, I think it's LC 1731, where it would require to say either, you know, that the, the sponsor of this communication is chosen to remain anonymous, and you have to choose one or the other. You choose, you know, you're the sponsor of this information, or you can say the sponsor of this information has remained to stay anonymous. I think that's the exact quote. And then the other one, I think that's the...
looks like 1791 says... has you identify whether it was a candidate, petition committee, or political committee authorized.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So,
so it could be a, it's a kind of a generic, so would give the Secretary of State some room to figure out who it might be. It wouldn't have to be specific as to what campaign, what candidate, what petition committee, or what political committee, just generically. Do I understand that right?
Yeah, and it's just basically a, you know, a way to kind of, you know, essentially get at the issue in a, in trying to be creative about it.
Well,
are these just for political action committees, or is it also, would also include outside communications?
So, the one version is for all communications. The other one is more, it does apply both, so. But only in some, I don't remember. Yeah, petition committees, political committees, yeah.
So, for example, the Best Project does a nonpartisan voter guide where we sometimes endorse candidates. Would we then put sponsored communication is the Best Project?
No, I don't. And Daniel Luca was kind of working with me on this and some of the language. I'm trying to remember specifically, and I was reading through it, looking for the Daniel, do you remember?
Yeah, so and what we're talking about here is LC 1791, and what it would do was it would require anyone who sends out an ad of a certain size, so we're not talking about pens or T-shirts here, but anyone who sends out an ad of a certain size that's supporting a candidate or in opposition to a candidate or supporting or in opposition to a ballot measure, you have to put on the ad whether or not it's approved by or authorized by the candidate. So if a candidate sends out, if a candidate A sends out an ad, it has to say on it, you know, this ad has been authorized by candidate A. If an independent group send down ads supporting a candidate, it would just have to say on the ad, this ad has not been authorized by a candidate or political action or, you know, ballot measure action committee. So for independent groups like the Bus Project or anyone else, it would just have to say on the ad that it wasn't authorized by a candidate, but still allows for organizations to have a degree of, you know, anonymous speech if that's what they feel is necessary.
Well, so, Daniel, what I was looking at is if it's just a voter pamphlet statement, I don't think because it's support or opposition, that was kind of what I was trying to, whether that, and I have my the way that I was thinking about it, if it's a, because there's those fake voter guides where they're not really voter guides, but they're like, hey, support these candidates, that would be in support where you'd have to comply, whether it's like a true, you know, very, you know, nonpartisan thing, that's where it would be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, certainly the fake voter guide situation that happened in 2016 was really problematic and spurred a lot of these conversations, but, you know, I think also just a generic ad, like, you know, you should vote for candidate A for office, you should vote against candidate A for office. I'm not sure about nonpartisan voter guides. I think that's definitely something we probably need to look into a little bit more.
Yeah, the way that it's written, so for instance, the League of Women Voters puts out their kind of guidance, like anybody who kind of, you know, fills it in and they're not supporting one way or another candidate, that one wouldn't fall under the bill, but kind of, and I'm not sure what the bus prints out in terms of, you know, whether it's like, hey, we do support this or we don't support that candidate, so.
So, and I... I might make the suggestion there may be a number of ways to approach the problem that we've identified here. Maybe we should see whether we agree on the finding and the general statement that an effort should be made to develop, and then think about, is there something specific that we feel comfortable saying about any of these ideas, because they're obviously gonna morph over time, and I'm assuming that you will or won't get advice from Ledge Council as to whether or not it meets a constitutional standard. But let's, you know, having seen that there is, you know, or there are some efforts to try to approach this, could we go back to the bolded statement, our system of transparency is hindered by our constitutional prescription on requiring attribution for campaign materials? Does that seem like an accurate statement of a finding that the group can agree to? Are there any objection?
This is Kyle.
Kyle.
I agree with the statement as a statement of fact, but it carries an implied value judgment that I disagree strongly with.
Okay.
I believe that anonymous political speech has great value, for example, see the Centrist papers, and that freedom of speech is a greater value than transparency. Anonymous political speech can focus attention on the merits of the issues rather than the people and groups involved, avoiding the irrational swamp of ad hominem arguments and identity politics. Anonymous political speech also protects supporters of unpopular ideas and social and potentially criminal backlash, leaving safe space for unpopular ideas to become more popular.
I actually also disagree with the statement above, but for a different reason, as you can imagine. I would disagree with it because we say it's hindered by a constitutional prescription. There's actually never been any Oregon court law or court case decision on disclaimers or attribution requirements. The Attorney General in 1999 wrote an opinion suggesting that the courts might strike it down, but actually the courts have never really ruled on this issue. So we don't really have a firm constitutional prescription unless the courts do rule on it.
And the IPL would concur with that, Madam Chair. I just want to speak from our perspective. I would agree with that statement completely.
Okay.
This is Justin. I do not like the negative connotation in the bold language, but I could probably get on board with the more targeted language below that.
This is Bill Cameron. I think we need to change that to the current constitutional interpretation or opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That's a more accurate reflection of the reality. And I really appreciate the effort by Daniel and Representative Grayfield in looking at how we can address this, because I think, you know, we've got a good proposal coming up, but we need to be careful how this is stated.
Okay. Others have any general things before I start playing with language? And
I just have one general question. Oh. So is the idea here to get around the constitutional problem by offering an anonymous, remaining anonymous option?
So the course, go ahead, Rep. Rayfield.
Yeah, so there's two different options. One that kind of, you know, there's really giving two options. One where you can specifically say that, hey, you know, it's paid for by, and then the alternative is if you don't want to say who it's paid for by, if you want to remain anonymous, like Kyle, you know, values that, and I think a lot of people do, you could then put paid for by an anonymous source or whatever that quote is. The other version, kind of, and so yes, it is a way to kind of skirt that, and then the other version does that just kind of in a different manner, which debatably, it could be a better way to do it.
So this is Norman.
Mm-hmm.
We don't allow anonymous expenditures in reporting to ORSTAR. So why is that so much different from anonymous attributions and ads?
It's not combined with the speech itself. I think the answer to that is that our ORSTAR requirements have not been struck down as a violation of the Constitution, because it isn't required that you do reporting together at the same time you're doing your advocacy. And the statute that was, and I think it was repealed, it was actually actively repealed by the legislature, required that you put whoever paid for it on the advocacy piece itself. And I think a challenge is still out there, possibly, for somebody that our reporting requirements require people to lose their anonymity and might be a constitutional violation, but that has not been brought up. And I think the interpretation of the First Amendment that was reflected in the Attorney General's opinion was that it was, you know, that you're mixing your advocacy speech also with the demand that it be that it not be anonymous. So I think we can, make it clear what the situation is. I think what we're trying to get at is that, and we could even just say it caused repeal of our previous legislation, a required attribution. The question is, does the analysis in that opinion allow for something else to happen? My particular concern that I brought was that the fact of the ability to put anonymous things out there, to know whether they've been reported or not, is almost impossible for the Elections Division, because we don't know who put it out there. So how are we going to ever know that they reported it? And I think it is worth some investigation of whether any of these other methodologies might help us in that regard.
This is Brad. I certainly hope that we thread this needle. I have to say, there's nothing we should do in this realm, at least according to the courts, that isn't going to the concept of a corrupting influence. And while we may occasionally preserve, through anonymous provisions, somebody who doesn't want to be held accountable to their opinions, the vast, vast anonymous communications are intentionally corrupting. They are often putting forward gross untruths.
Mm-hmm.
They are intentionally anonymous because not because they're afraid to be accountable, though they are, but because they want to be able to put forward their views and often their lies in a way that has the greatest possible influence. So I hope we tread this needle. I understand, obviously, strong protector of free speech, but you don't call fire in a crowded theater. And there are limits, and we ought to try and find them.
And the other advantage of LC 1791 is that it would prevent independent groups from falsely speaking as if they were the candidate. Because what we've seen recently, and certainly has happened with the fake voters pamphlet statement, is that an independent group can put out an ad, write it in first person, you know, put the candidate's logo on it and make it seem like it's coming from the candidate, which really means that the candidate, when they're running for office, doesn't have, I think it's possible to misinterpret what they're saying. So preventing that from happening is a value in itself. And, I think under LC 1791, if an organization wants to put out an ad that talks about a candidate, they're, of course, free to do that. But they just have to make it clear it's not coming from the candidate.
This is Kyle. I want to disagree with Brad's suggestion that anonymous speech is inherently corrupting in the strongest possible term.
So what if we had a statement that read, like, current constitutional interpretation regarding required attribution on campaign materials, while reflecting an important protection for anonymous speech, also hinders transparency in our election system? So it's not an all it's not a completely negative thing, but it recognizes the particular weakness that we're trying to get to. Would an acknowledgement that, you know, we're not necessarily completely agreeing that it's never appropriate to be anonymous, that this particular constitutional interpretation has hindered transparency in our system, that it does have a negative impact on transparency?
I apologize. Could you read that again?
Well, of course, I made it up on the spot. So Aaron is trying to find it. Current constitutional interpretation regarding required attribution on campaign materials may provide appropriate protections for anonymous speech, but also hinders transparency in our election system. Or may reflect appropriate protections for anonymous speech. Can that be a consensus statement? Or do the anti-anonymous need it to? I don't think we can. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, we've got a little reflection. Current constitutional interpretation regarding required attributions, I think it needs to be plural, on campaign materials may reflect appropriate protection for anonymous speech, but hinders transparency in our election system.
Not to wordsmith it too much, but can we add transparency and accountability to that? Because, for instance, an independent expenditure pretending to speak like a candidate or, you know, for a candidate is a question of accountability.
I don't know if we lose people with that. I could make the argument that transparency is its own form of accountability, and that would be unnecessary to do, but I'm not necessarily opposed to it. I'm sorry that we can't put it on the screen. Is that going to make it too difficult for people to?
Sounds okay.
Secretary, this is Justin. Admit I'm a little lost, perhaps, but I feel like we're talking apples and oranges here. This original bold statement very strongly suggests that we want to open the Constitution in some fashion, in my mind, and I do not and will not support that. I do support what Daniel said, though. So, Daniel, you earned a gold star today.
Oh, my gosh, one of us persuaded the other. Woo!
Put that in the record.
Under the Oregon Constitution today, unless somebody can show me case law, I don't think there is any prohibition on us saying that an ad put out by somebody must state whether or not it was endorsed by the candidate. And that seems to me to answer most of the issues this section is getting at.
Well, I'm concerned about trying to reach a legal conclusion that we can have make very good strong arguments about, but we've got nothing, you know, from anybody authoritative. Not that we aren't police, right? That, you know, so I think, you know, reflecting current constitutional interpretation, it gets us off the hook that we aren't saying it's right or wrong, and it means that and we're not, and we're no longer, I think, in this statement implying that the Constitution itself needs to be affected. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but we're not going to go there. And we're acknowledging that it may be appropriate in some respect to be concerned about protecting anonymous speech, but we're acknowledging also that creates a transparency and accountability problem for us. So we're just kind of acknowledging what we live with without trying to reach a legal conclusion or to resolve that balance one way or the other. Current constitutional interpretation requiring required attributions on campaign materials may reflect appropriate protections for anonymous speech, but hinders transparency and accountability in our election system. Can we get there?
Good, sure, yeah.
Okay, with no objection.
I'm a no.
Okay, Justin's a no. Okay. Kyle, are you a no, or did we? Pardon?
Yeah, I'm still a no.
Okay, Kyle's still a no.
Can you repeat that once more, please?
Sure. Current constitutional interpretations regarding required attributions on campaign materials may reflect appropriate protections for anonymous speech, but hinders transparency and accountability in our election system.
Great. Ken Emerson, yes.
Okay.
I'm not thrilled with appropriate protections, but I will vote for it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the same way.
Thank you. You're such a good and reasonable group. I appreciate that. I'm going to miss you all, I have to say. So the next piece is an effort should be made to develop legislative options that would meet constitutional standards but would make those distributing anonymous campaign materials more easily held to reporting requirements.
This is Daniel. I just want to ask, because this issue will be coming up for legislative session. Mm-hmm. Is the vote on that statement, the one we just had, do we have a firm vote count on that? Is it?
I think we had an objection. Yeah. So everybody else was a yes, right? Mm-hmm.
Is it 11-2?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Thank
you.
That was kind of our statement of how we see it, and that we've identified there's a tension that we're concerned about, and with some exceptions we're concerned about. And then the next question is whether or not we actually are saying that the legislature should make an effort to develop an option that would meet constitutional standards but would hold those distributing anonymous campaign materials more easily to reporting requirements. The language is on that. I said it slightly differently, but I'm intending that language that's on the screen.
Madam Chair, I would move that we call for a vote on this.
Yeah, I second.
Okay. Let's go through the yeas and nays.
All right. Senator Rosenbaum.
Yes.
Representative Kinnamer.
Yes.
Representative Rayfield?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Nikki?
Yes.
I skipped Dave. Dave?
I have some small reservations about it, but I'll vote yes.
Thank you.
Margie?
Yes.
Andrew?
We may have lost him again.
Daniel.
Yes.
Kyle.
No.
Brad.
Yes.
Norman.
Yes.
Seth?
Yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes. So we have 12 yeses and one no. We will try to collect Andrew's.
You got a yes from me, too. This is Andrew's,
okay.
Right?
Oh, perfect. Okay. Perfect.
13 to 1. So I would suggest that we won't try to rewrite or, you know, debate about the various provisions. We appreciate Representative Rayfield and team, you know, beginning to explore down that line. And that's one where we will have a little bit of a strong recommendation, I think, to offer. And again, it may be if the task force meets again during the session that you might have a specific proposal to love or hate as we go forward. So we have Norman's additional piece on the statement of independent expenditures. Can you give us a so that we maybe don't rewrite or try to edit the bill itself, but to give us what that intent is and see if that's something that can garner support? Norman, does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
So the intent is to get at the problem of independent expenditures relative to limits on contributions, so that if we tighten down on independent expenditures, that makes the whole package of contribution limits and public financing work better. So this proposal is to at least make independent expenditures more transparent by making them report on the same kind of schedule as other candidates and political committees and in the same manner. So it's just equating really independent expenditure reporting with the other kinds of reporting that's in our OrStar. And there's a couple other suggestions that are in that proposed draft. But those are different issues about the level of reporting for different kinds of independent expenditures and so on. But that is not the point that I'm trying to make here. Is that clear to everybody?
Questions from folks?
Norm, this is Justin. So in essence, you are proposing to both speed up IE reports and to make sure they're all on OrStar in a similar manner to a campaign contribution.
That's right.
Okay. It would be identical.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, could we take a 5-minute break and let you, someone there, try and put that into the same kind of level, bold, general statement and just put it back before the body, as opposed to going through line by line on your proposal? Norm, my suggestion is if we generally agree with that kind of statement you just said, let's get it done.
I'm going to ask Aaron to work on.
I put in, isn't adequate, but maybe I did put in a concept that went along with this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
It's in the email.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't think I have that in front of me, or maybe I do and I'm not finding it.
That was in Aaron's email last night.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm going to have her bring it up for me. In the meantime, I would love to hear from Representative Rayfield, if you would, how this might differ or be the same as some of the concepts that you've been working on with respect to IEs, and whether...
Yeah, obviously the intent is the exact same thing that we were kind of trying to get at. So, and I haven't had an opportunity to read through, the concept. So overall, in general, the concept is something that I agree with.
So the language that Norman had suggested was a concrete proposal, am I right?
Yep.
To require proposed, okay. So we could say the task force recommends a proposal to require disclosure in OrStar of independent expenditures more quickly whenever they are made, not just immediately before elections, and require that person who makes independent expenditures disclose sources of money, regardless the purpose of the sources, to the same extent as normal political committees. I might suggest we might want to simplify that to make the reporting requirements of independent expenditure committees to be the same as other political committees. Norman, would that?
Yeah, I think that's getting at it. Except it's not necessarily a committee, but it's a independent
expenditure filers.
Expenditures is the best phrase I can put in there, as there might be individuals or committees or corporations.
So we're not expanding who's required. So we could call them independent expenditure filers. I don't have my election staff with me today. Oh. They're all stuck on Snowy Hill someplace. They're probably watching in horror or something at what I'm saying. But I think we refer to them as in the system as independent expenditure filers. They have to meet the requirement of other political committees, both for timing and information of their expenditures and contributions.
That would be much simpler than what I wrote.
Question, Norm, is your proposal to also expand or enhance the quality of donor disclosure to an IE group, or is this consistent with current law?
Well, they have to disclose now, so I don't think I'm encouraging their disclosure, except that it's going to be more timely and be the same as other filers.
But you're not proposing to change the quality of information currently disclosed by IE filers.
Do you want to define what you mean by the quality of
whether it be, you could name, occupation, amount, those are all currently disclosable in an IE filing. Is that correct?
That's correct. And that whole description is in a separate section of the ORS. And I'm just moving that to be the same as the other kinds of filers in ORSTAR. So there might be some differences in detail, but essentially it would be the same as they're doing now, except on a faster schedule and the same as other kinds of filers.
Madam Chair, I would move the concept language as you described it. So what I'm saying is that wouldn't be a specific sort of the specifics in your proposal, but it certainly is a concept that we ought to endorse and move forward.
That's all I'm asking, is the concept be agreed to.
So, Aaron, can we read the language of the very much shortened version that we did? So what she's suggested is the task force proposes, would support proposals to align independent expenditure filer disclosure requirements with all other filer requirements in ORSTAR. We could make it a little more elegant, but
we will make it definitely more elegant.
That's captured the essence, I think.
Okay.
And just, Madam Chair, members of the task force, just to be clear, the intent is to align independent expenditure filer requirements with all other filing requirements for all other campaign finance requirements or required filers in ORSTAR. The intent. So they align with everybody else who has to file. Timeline, amounts, things like
detail
that.
Is that
what we are getting at? I'm just wanting to be clear, Norman, that's your intent.
Yes.
Okay.
Do we have any objection? Do people feel we need to take a roll call vote?
Apologies. Could you read the statement once more?
Go ahead, Erin.
Okay. the proposed recommendation to align independent expenditure filers disclosure requirements with all other filing requirements regarding OraStar.
Okay.
Not the most elegant. We will make it certainly more elegant, but they capture the intent of what Norm is trying to bring before us today.
Okay.
And we would hope by smoothing it out that we will not either add to the requirements or change it. I think we have a pretty solid record on that. So I ask again, do we have any objections to including that recommendation?
This is Kyle, perhaps just me.
Okay.
This is Margie. So are we recommending lowering the threshold to the 500?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
Mostly timelines is what it sounds like.
No, the thresholds, we're saying that the thresholds would be the same as other political committees. The we don't have on our list at the moment, and perhaps on our last 16 minutes we'll think about it, that the thresholds would be the same, the detail of reporting would be the same, and the timelines would be the same for independent expenditures. That answer your question, Margie?
Yes, I'm just reading on here that he had $500 on the question mark. I wasn't sure we weren't trying to do that at the same time.
No.
Right, that was a comment that I was trying to highlight that as a possible other thing that we could consider, but that's not what I'm suggesting in this concept.
So, objections? Well, how exciting. I think we're good. We did have, and I know Representative Rayfield has presented for us a number of things that he's looking at in additional legislation. I didn't include any of them on this list. We didn't have a very fulsome discussion about it. Included some limit lowering and some changes. We're generally speaking here in support of consistency among filers and no special extra because you're an independent expenditure, you kind of aren't subject to everything. Some of the provisions that Representative Rayfield is considering may touch on that, but I would leave it to the group to on your own speak to those things if he's successful, as I think he will be, in getting the legislature at least to discuss some of the other provisions.
Public financing for Andrew to vote.
Okay. And do we have Andrew?
Yes, you do.
Oh, sorry. Yay.
My mute off.
It's okay. So we wanted to go back to public financing to record your vote on that. And this is what we ended up with. The task force recommends that the Oregon legislature move forward with active debate regarding possible public financing system, regarding a possible public financing system. The task force encourages application of the values described in our 2015 report and that investments be made where additional resources are needed to clarify outstanding questions.
Okay, so we backed away from support for a pilot thing completely. I mean, that's a bit disappointing, but yes, I support that statement. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, what else have I forgotten?
I don't think we have.
We didn't have a representative of the transition team for the secretary-elect able to get to us today. I'm sure, like everybody else, they're sitting in an ice cube somewhere. But they were given all the information for this meeting and the call-in, so it wasn't a failure to try to include them. They're obviously going to have to be evaluating and thinking on behalf of the secretary-elect how they want to handle We will, before I am gone, we will have a draft for an add-on to our 2015 report that reflects the decisions that we made today, and that will be given to the legislative leadership. We weren't asked to make a report at this time. The only one we were asked to make was last December, but this obviously makes sense, and I don't think they will say we didn't want your report. So we'll do that. I do think there are going to be vehicles. LCs filed through committees and my filing of them that will touch on virtually all of this and represent opportunities, whether the language ends up, you know, as you know, exactly as it is or not. And I don't think you should consider your work complete. I'm hopeful that a continued this group has been very thoughtful about their discussions and the challenge of some very disparate views. And I think the legislature would benefit from continuing to get evaluations from the folks who've been on this task force and listen to those myriad voices before they make decisions. And it's my hope that it will continue to do so. I don't have control over all of that as I might like, but it certainly is going to be my strong recommendation to the secretary-elect as they come in to try to continue the work and build on the investment that you all have made in these reports. And I thank you very much for that, unless people have other items they want to bring.
I know, Madam Chair, just to thank you again, as we have thanked you profusely for your organized approach to this, your diplomacy, and your strategic leadership and energy, and also to thank again Erin Seiler for her tireless staffing of this task force.
Thank you, Senator.
Yeah, thank you very much, Secretary Atkins and Erin.
I agree, and thank the Secretary for her leadership in this whole task force effort. You've been very helpful and diplomatic all the way around.
Thank you.
As we were saying,
Secretary, this is Justin, and I said a year ago that I'd done this twice before and that it had been painful. This was by far the most fruitful campaign finance task force I've participated in. It's thanks to you and Erin, and we owe you a debt of gratitude.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you. Madam Secretary, this is Brad, and I echo all the previous comments, and what you've brought us to today is a huge set of accomplishments and a step forward and a proud accomplishment. And I thank you for your leadership and your team's leadership and Erin in getting us to this point.
Thank you, Brad.
Hey, Madam Chair,
This is Dave Greenfield.
Yes.
And Dave.
Go ahead.
And, do a duet, too, please.
I just want to say thanks for putting up with me. I know it can be annoying, and it's been a lot of fun working with you. And so I think we've got a lot of good work. So on. I wish you the best in retirement.
Thank you very much, Dan.
And I would add just, Madam Secretary, that you've done a pretty impressive job of maintaining a delicate balance through a challenging process. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you.
Madam Secretary, thank you for good work, and thanks to the entire committee. I've enjoyed working with you, and I think we have some products we can be proud of.
Thank you, Representative Kenemer. I would be very disappointed if there was nothing on which we had a nearly unanimous view of, mm-hmm. And I hope Kyle in particular and Justin in some other cases feel like their input has been respected and reflected in the way that we've had an impact on the dialogue for sure. It was my goal to be able to have the task force itself speak for itself, which, given the disparate opinions, was not an easy task. But you hung with me, and We actually have 10 minutes left over, and that's just, you know, free time for you. Thank you for your kind words. I will miss it, but I am going to the Australian Open.
And quick point.
Send us a postcard, Madam Chair. Send us a postcard.
Okay.
He's got to jump in.
We're all freezing up here.
Yeah, I will do that.
Thank you to all the committee from the Independent Party on my behalf of Rob Harris, who served quite ably well before I got involved. I just wanted to say that. It's been a collegial and a very, very productive experience, and I hope we get a chance to work more together in the future in 2017.
Thank you, Andrew.
And real quickly, Senator Rosenbaum, is this your last task force with us?
It probably is, unless somebody calls an emergency.
Well, I certainly can say for Common Cause that, you know, we're sorry to lose you. You've been a wonderful addition to this task force, and you know, has been really deeply involved in all these conversations. And we really appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
This is Nikki. It's been a pleasure to work with two absolutely incredible women leaders, and we're sad to see both go. So thank you so much for all the incredible work you did, and thank you, Aaron, for keeping us on task and capturing all of our agreements and disagreements.
Indeed.
And this is Kyle. I want to say thank you. I know as a contrarian, you've been concerned that perhaps I haven't felt as good about my input, but I do believe my input has been valued by the committee, and that's largely a credit to you. Thank you again.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. All right, we're done saying nice things about each other. going on, thank you, especially today with the weather and everything. And so we'll draft and try to get something to you. I'm not going to make a promise as to when, but before I finalize, I will let you see what it is that we're going to move to legislative leadership. Thank you all. Do you want to push the button?
Thank you.
Do the honors. There we go. Go ahead.